Good evening, everybody. Before we start, I'd like to ask them if they could say some few words.
Yeah. So we'll keep a moment of quiet, still ourselves, recollect the business of the night and our hopes. Two very brief prayers tonight. The first one, I'll leave you to decide whether it fits the bill for budget night. O God, teach us to distinguish negotiation and betrayal, and when to defend our truth until the end, and when to climb down from our certainties in the search for real peace. Amen. And then the second one, you have shown us, Lord, what is good. Enable us, we pray, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with you, our God. Amen. Thank you.
Good evening again. Welcome, members, honourable aldermen, ladies and gentlemen, to this meeting of the council. Please ensure that mobile phones are off. Do all councils have the agenda? I'll now ask the Chief Executive to report on the emergency.
I think it's because we've got two in at once. Thank you, Chairman. There are no... There are no emergencies. We will. It's just for now, yeah. There are no emergencies this evening. So if there is a fire alarm, then it was for real, and members of the public are asked to evacuate the building either through the side door to my right or through the wedding door. And I think everybody knows where the toilet and the water is this evening. Thank you, Chairman. That goes back to Will.
Okay, are there any apologies for absence?
Yes, Chairman, we have apologies from Councillors Windriss and Wainwright.
Thank you. The third item on the agenda is public question time, and I have no public questions. Item four, minutes. Item four on the agenda is to approve, as a correct record, the minutes of the ordinary meeting of council held on 8th of December 2016, pages 7 to 30. As chairman of the council, I move that the minutes of the ordinary meeting of the council held on 8th of December 2016 to be approved and signed as a correct record. Is that seconded? Thank you, Councillor Cowling. Unless a member has an amendment to change the minutes with the words to be included or deleted, which I can put to the vote, I will move to the vote on approving the minutes as drafted. Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. We don't appear to have any amendment slips, is the first comment. But if you actually look at the minutes of the meeting on the 8th of December, you'll find that the end of the meeting in the minutes bears no relation to the discussions that took place in here. Because the item that we discussed in here last on the agenda was the timetable of meetings. We also concluded on a happy note in the evening on about three votes failing, I think succeeding in the end to take a vote, but having two failed votes. There is no mention of that in here. I wonder if it would be possible, Chair, for you to see if you could get that organised, because it's not the question of a simple minute by a mile or a simple amendment, but as it stands at the moment, it's plainly wrong.
Excuse me, Councillor Clark, I'm just taking advice on this point. Okay, Councillor Clark. Minutes record decisions made, but thank you for your comment. How about this one?
It's going to be the right unit that's voted with.
How about that?
No.
No, Chair, I do hope that the shuffling of the voting machines is not going to cause too much.
We will take that into account. Where do we go from this?
I've got the machines there. Have another go, Chairman.
Okay. Okay, let's try this. Are you not hearing me at all? And that? Is that it? No, no. Okay. How about that? Pardon? Is that okay? Okay. Right. Normally,
the minutes
reflect the votes that have been taken, the decisions taken. But as you're pointing out, Councillor Clark, there was a couple of votes that weren't registered, and the minutes will be amended to take that into account.
Thank you, Chair.
So, on saying that, can we go to a vote on the minutes? Is it?
Chairman, that's 22 votes for and 5 abstentions.
The motion is carried. Just to let you know that I voted there with Councillor Windrus's machine for the reasons that are obvious, and it'll be reflected in the minutes.
But it's you voting, not Councillor.
Yeah, Windrus. So it's me voting, not Councillor Windrus, because he's not here.
No, it's not funny.
Okay, moving on, item 5, there are no items of urgent business. On item 6, declaration of interest.
Chair. I would, the Liberal Group Chair has, and we only found out about this yesterday, has submitted a motion of no confidence in the Chief Executive. Unfortunately, after consultation with you, this motion has been rejected. And on that basis,
point
Chair,
of order, Chairman.
Yeah.
On that basis.
Excuse me, Councillor Clark. I haven't received anything from you ahead of this time, and we must stick to the agenda. I have no items of urgent business. We move on.
Basis, Chair, I'm asking you if you will consider, this is me asking you, if you will consider us looking at a council at what we're going to do with that motion of no confidence in the Chief Executive under urgent business tonight. I'm not asking us to debate it tonight, but I believe that we are entitled to ask you to consider things under urgent business.
Councillor Clark, I have in the past asked you if, when you have something that you want to raise, that you raise at the council meeting at the last minute before I had a chance to look at it. But I've asked you before if you could just have the courtesy to, when you've got something that's important, to say it to me before. This raising it at this moment, when I have no item of urgent business, it's not right for council.
Chair, you were consulted on this item, not by me, but by a senior officer, last week. And on the basis that you were consulted last week, I've obviously made the wrong assumption that you understood what it was. Particularly as you have not contacted me to let me know, as a member of this council for which you are chair, why you aren't supporting us to be able to discuss that motion.
That's the wrong way round. I'm not going to discuss it here. we move on to item six, declarations of interest. Does anybody have an interest to declare under the members' code of conduct? Councillor Andrews?
Yes, Chairman. Under item 13, allocation of section 106 monies, I'm a member of Moulton Town Council. Personal interest, not prejudicial.
Councillor Keel?
Yes, same item. I'm a member of Norton Town Council.
Councillor Clark?
I'm a county councillor, and on that basis it's personal but non-prejudicial interest.
Anybody else? Moving on to... sorry, Councillor Arnold?
Thank you, Chairman. I don't know if there's anything relevant in the agenda tonight, but if there is, I would like to say that I'm a member of North Yorkshire County Councillor.
Thank you. Councillor Sanderson?
Thank you, Chairman. Ditto.
Councillor Mrs. Shields?
Ditto, Chairman.
Councillor Burr?
Ditto.
The 106 money, Pickering Town Council, personal non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Item 7, announcements. I had a delightful burn supper for the charities, which I have this year, and it was a really nice evening, and I really do appreciate that so many councillors went to it. Thank you very much for the support. And tonight we've got a lot of work to get through, so please look at the clock. Stick to 3 minutes. If it's getting up to the 3 minute mark, people probably stop listening to you anyway, because they're looking at me to see if I'm going to stop you. So if you want to make an impact with your debating skills, please do it just before the 3 minute mark. Thank you. Members, questions on notice. Item 8 is on the agenda is to receive members' questions on notice. There are no questions on notice. Item 9, a business adjourned from the last ordinary meeting.
The same thing's happening again, despite it being Councillor Windrus's microphone. The more suspicious among us would think it might not be the microphone.
Yeah, for those that have you got your mobile phones onto your bookies, please switch them off. Let's see if that works. Switch them off, not to airplane mode or something like that. Okay, there is one item of business adjourned from the last meeting of the council. The council needs to consider the appointment of a representative to serve on the police and crime panel following Councillor Hope's decision to step down from rule. Are there any nominations? Councillor Cowling? Can you put that on your speaker?
I'd like to nominate Councillor Val-Arnold. See, my microphone's okay.
Is there a seconder? Councillor Steve Arnold. Any other nominations? Councillor Jowett.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to nominate Lindsay Burr.
Any seconders?
I'll second it, Chairman.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, it's voting using the plus and minus machines on your units. Councillor Burr?
I was just going to say that because there are two people that have been nominated, would it be helpful if we made a little speech of why we think people should vote for us? That is what we normally do.
Okay. Yes. Councillor Arnold, would you like to say anything?
Yes, certainly. They've put me forward because I am on Safer Rydale from here, which we've got a lot to do. We have a lot to do with the Police and Crime Commission. It's delivering services and things that are used, obviously, or that people want to achieve and see what the police are doing in this particular area. For Rydale. And from that, I do have a lot of interest in that, and I've been to a lot of meetings and can keep up with what the Police and Crime Commission Board is doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Arnold. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to put myself forward for this particular post. I also work with Safer Rydale, and I work very closely with the local police. I like to work regarding the crime issues and the drug issues around our area. I've been involved with the police, with police groups on many, many occasions, and something I enjoy doing is taking evening walks around my ward with the police to understand the better role of the police and the issues that they face. The police work with many, many organisations, and while doing the night walks, we can actually work with groups such as dealing with homelessness, mental issues involving doctors who are on call, and dealing with underage drug and alcohol abuse. I'm passionate about safeguarding and equality, and I want to make sure that if I was elected, I would always put Rydale first. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move to the vote, and we have the two buttons for, plus and minus. So any vote for Councillor Arnold or plus and Councillor Burr minus?
Chairman, that is 19 votes for Councillor Val Arnold and 9 votes for Councillor Burr.
So Councillor Arnold has been appointed. Okay, moving on to item 10. Okay, Councillor Cowling, can you make your latest statement?
Thank you, Chairman. I hope my microphone manages to behave for this. So, at our first council meeting of 2017, I would like to congratulate those members of the Rydale community who have been acknowledged for their public work in the New Year's Honours. The Right Reverend James Jones on receiving a KBE for services to bereaved families and justice, having chaired the Hillsborough Independent Panel. And also, which gives me particular pleasure, to Councillor David Cousins on receiving an MBE for services to agriculture and rural communities in North Yorkshire, particularly through the Rydale Agricultural Show. Very well deserved, David. Welcome. Thank you. Moving to our agenda for tonight, members will be considering the budget for 2017-18 and our financial strategy through to 2021. Members of this council were quite clear about their wishes for the future delivery of services. They wanted to achieve the savings required of this council without reducing services. Only a far-reaching restructure of the organisation could achieve that. Thanks to the hard work and commitment of all staff of the council, savings in the region of £1 million will be achieved by March 2018. No mean feat in itself, and on top of that, there have been no compulsory redundancies. This has been the result of hard work and determination, and made possible by members allowing officers to do their job. Under the direction of our Chief Executive, staff are continuing to work on the redesign of council services in order to maintain the range of high quality services delivered to our residents and customers, all within the budget parameters we will be setting this evening. I have to thank our Chief Executive for her courage and ability in implementing what has been a huge change. We are now a fit-for-purpose modern council. I also am very happy to welcome the government's announcement to the North Yorkshire and East Riding area has been allocated £23.7 million from the Local Growth Fund. Rydale has been successful in attracting funding for a new employment site in Pickering, which gives me particular pleasure, on the Thornton Road Industrial Estate. And that's to allow the expansion of the high-tech engineering sector in Rydale. This is excellent news for Rydale and follows our previous success with funding for the Malton Business Park and Food Enterprise Zone. This continues to support the delivery of our priority of investing in jobs in our area.
Thank you, Councillor Cowling. Anybody want to ask Councillor Cowling anything about the statement? Councillor Potter.
Thank you, Chair. It's certainly good news that we've got the funding for several industrial estates and employment sites. The thing that worries me is that we have enabling development of a business park, a food enterprise zone, and at least three housing estates in Malton and Old Malton, specifically for a new cattle market, which is conspicuous by its absence. Where is it? Have we been hoodwinked now that the A64 has been breached for development?
Councillor Potter, I don't believe so. The livestock market has always been an aspiration of this council, and we continue to support the people who are involved in making that happen.
Councillor Mr. Shields.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm glad to see there are no compulsory redundancies. I wonder how many more staff, however, will be leaving, say, in the next month or two.
There's a phased programme of people leaving, and by the end of March all the staff that are leaving will have left. If you have a look at the chart that we've put up in the members' room, you'll see what the new structure is and the staff that will be remaining after March.
Councillor Ives.
Thank you. You referenced the council's restructure in your leader statement. May you confirm what the payback period is for the decision of this council to make the previous corporate director redundant?
You've asked this question before, Councillor Ives, and you've had a written reply to that question. And I do have the answer that you were given here. It was a bumped redundancy, and that included bumping down the organisation. The total savings throughout the restructure is a salary saving of £644,000. And there is a payback period of under 1 year.
Councillor Thornton.
Thank you, Chair. I'm nearly reassured. by the sentence, we are now a fit-for-purpose modern council. Can we know how we are going to evidence that? How are we going to measure it, please?
This council has a system of continually monitoring the performance. We have a set number of criteria that we look at continuously as members. They come to Resources Working Party and they're available for any member to log on and see on the website. So it will be through continuous monitoring.
Councillor Clark, did you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. You say members of the council were quite clear about their wishes for the future delivery of services. They wanted to achieve the average, the savings required of this council without reducing services. That's real apple pie and motherhood. And I would can't imagine myself in a sober state asking to deliver the same services and make a couple of million pounds in total of savings, or even the £1 million in savings. So could you tell me where it was in the council meetings and structure where this sentence comes from that members had expressed that wish? Some members may, but I don't remember members collectively doing this.
I think many of you who are here will remember numerous occasions on when we as a council have tried to reduce services. In fact, I've seen us actually take a decision to reduce services. We actually took a decision once to close some public conveniences, and it wasn't very long before we were back in this council chamber changing that decision again. So it isn't just through an actual formal decision in this council chamber. It is a well-known fact that members of this council have been very reluctant and found it extremely difficult to accept any reduction in services. I think we've looked at things like pest control, and there's always a really legitimate argument about why we should continue to do it. So, I think, you know, it's very clear that members did not want to reduce services.
Supplementary, Chair. The implication from the statement here, which Councillor Cowling has just underlined, is that there was £1 million+ worth of inefficiency in this council. Now, that is a possibility, but I actually think it is not the favourite. I think the favourite is that she should wait and see as to what the level of services are when the whole of this picture is put into place, and not assume now that we've achieved something that's probably never been done before, probably won't be done in the future, and that is maintaining everything the same as it was with no and cut
question, please.
People and cut people as well. And on that basis, does she believe that we are going to have no cuts at all, or does she believe that it was that inefficient before?
I'm absolutely positive that this council was not inefficient before. What I do think is that your cup is always half empty and my cup is always half full. I think there are a lot of things that can be done to change the processes in the back offices of this council, and that is what the staff are telling us. They believe they're very positive that they can make these improvements. So, and for me, it isn't a case of waiting and see if we are successful or not. I'm absolutely 100% certain that we shall be successful. I'm not saying that services won't be delivered differently and that things won't change in the processes that we use to deliver those services. What I am absolutely certain of
is that the staff in this council will deliver as they always have.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman, and congratulations, Councillor Cousins. As we all know, staff are the backbone of the organisation, and with the severe cuts to our staffing and the loss of very able staff to other organisations because of the uncertainties, I'm told that morale is very, very low in our building at this moment in time. I understand that the workload of the staff is now much increased. Are you happy about the pressures that we have put on our staff and the reductions that appear in various departments?
I've spoken to the Member Champion about this, and no one has approached the Member Champion to say that the workload is too high or that morale is low. So obviously you know something that I don't.
Yeah, people do, they do talk to me, and I'm not the staff champion anymore. But I'd like to talk about the reorganisation, and in early September we had a final structure agreed, and our employees were asked to apply for their preferences 1, 2 and 3. The structure then changed after we appointed our Deputy Chief Executive, and the new structure was then put in place. Why did this happen? Was that fair to the people who actually applied for posts that didn't exist, were taken away, and now new posts that have been created?
One thing I always wished to happen through the whole of this restructure was that it should remain flexible and that it should be responsive to the needs of the organisation, the authority and the delivery of services. And I'm confident that that has happened.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. On the last paragraph, noted that the Council has been successful in obtaining money from the LEP. What steps is the Council taking to obtain money from the LEP or elsewhere in order to deal with the antiquated drainage and sewage system in Moulton and Norton?
I wish you'd given me notice of that question, Paul, because it's a good question, but I am going to have to say that I will get you a written answer. I will speak to Julian and I'll find out if there is money available for that type of thing. Thank you.
Councillor Ives, supplemental.
Sorry, I was going to say a supplementary, but then you went straight to someone else, so I thought it would be polite not to interrupt. Well, I think you asked a supplementary at the time. So going back to my original question, I'm aware that I asked the two of the same questions consecutively at Council, which is what is the payback period for making the previous post holder or the corporate director redundant? Now, the reason I ask that is because in the initial report it was quoted at about 18 months. It then got revised in the subsequent report to about 22 months when it was said that it was a head of service. And yet, I've not seen a head of service person being made redundant. In fact, the numbers of heads of service equivalent has increased as a result of this restructure. Now, I appreciate you have given me a payback period for the total number of staff made redundant, but my question is, what is the payback period for the corporate director position? Now, payback periods were quoted in the report that went before members, so what is the finalised payback period, please? And if I can't get a response now, I would appreciate a written answer, please.
It's my belief that the redundancy process cannot, no single position can be looked at in isolation. Each redundancy has consequences and a knock-on effect for the organisation, and it's only when you've finished the whole process that you can see the benefits of the bumped redundancy.
Okay, any more? Okay, let's move on. Item 11 on tonight's agenda relating to the revenue and capital budgets and the setting of the council tax for 2017. All members should have with them the council agenda and the budget papers. The following additional papers have been tabled or sent electronically. A completed set of information in the table at paragraph 4 on the agenda front and in Annex C. I'm going to first, I'll split this into two. The Council first needs to consider the recommendations of the Policy and Resources meeting held on the 2nd of February 2017, shown on page 111 of the agenda, and the report of the Section 151 officer shown on page 39 of the agenda, and Roman numeral 1 of item 11 on the agenda. I suggest that we adopt the following. Firstly, I will ask the officer to introduce the report and take questions. Members have already had the opportunity of asking questions at the budget briefing and the policy and resources meeting on the 2nd of February. When these have finished, I will ask Councillor Cowling to move a motion dealing with minute 47 of the policy and resources committee meeting on the 2nd of February, the recommendations in the section 151 officer's report, and the budget recommendation under paragraph Roman numeral 1 of item 11 on the council agenda. Someone will then ask to second that motion. The motion is seconded, Councillor Cowling can make a speech. After Cowling has spoken, I will take
it again. Can we go back to that last few sentences again? It was completely inaudible here.
Okay.
It still is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that any better?
Sorry.
If I stand, is that better?
Because you're blocking it with your both if you jumped off to it.
Is that any better?
Yes.
Okay. Firstly, I will ask the officer to introduce the report and take questions. Members have already had the opportunity of asking questions at the budget briefing and the policy and resources meeting on the 2nd of February. When these are finished, I will ask Councillor Cowling to move a motion dealing with minute 47 of the policy and resources committee meeting on the 2nd of February, the recommendations in the section 151 officer's report, and the budget recommendation under paragraph Roman numeral 1 of item 11 on the council agenda. Someone will then be asked to second that motion. Once the motion is seconded, Councillor Cowling can make a speech. After Councillor Cowling has spoken, I will take any amendments. And I call upon Peter Johnson, the Council's Finance Manager, to present the report and answer any questions.
Thank you, Chair. It's been a challenging process this year to deliver a balanced budget set against the backdrop of continued reductions to core grant funding and consequently the need to fund the cost of unavoidable growth through further savings. The final local government finance settlement was announced yesterday and I can confirm that there's no change from the provisional figures. There's also been no major change to the proposed revenue or capital budget figures from those reported at the budget briefing in January and subsequently Resources Working Party and PNR in February. And therefore, I don't propose to repeat the same level of detail. The police, fire authority and county council have all held their budget setting meetings and have set precepts at 1.99%. The county council have also applied the additional increase to fund the adult social care. The recommendations within this strategy are based on an overall £5 increase in the Rydale share of the Band D council tax for next year, which is in line with the referendum threshold for Shire districts. In delivering a balanced budget, we expect to deliver efficiencies and savings amounting to £1.08 million. The bulk of this saving will be achieved through the Towards 2020 efficiency programme, and a summary of the efficiencies and the growth items is provided on page 66 of the agenda at Appendix A. A more detailed breakdown of this information was requested by members of Policy and Resources Committee, and this has been supplied. Additionally, we forecast that the work undertaken to date through the Towards 2020 programme will deliver a further £100,000 of savings by 2019-20, on top of the £894,000 highlighted in the appendix. An updated medium-term revenue forecast is included on page 67 of the agenda at Appendix B. The forecast highlights the need to find further savings of over £600,000 between 2018-19 and 2021-22. As members are aware, the Council are in discussion with North Yorkshire County Council around the relocation of the waste transfer station. The outcome at this point is uncertain, but has the potential to significantly increase this savings requirement. Chair, I believe the strategies presented is based on prudent estimates and offers a robust budget for 17-18, backed by satisfactory levels of reserves. I've got Mandy Birchall with me tonight from our finance section. Between us, we'll do our best to answer any questions you might have. If we can't answer tonight, then we'll make sure that you get or get a written response. I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Councillor Ives.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question's in towards the Chairman of the Policy and Resources Committee, please. So my question is, can you confirm that this council is putting more into New Hernsburnus now than it was last year, and in fact this council is continuing to save?
Yes, it. Oh, pardon me. I'm sorry. yes, it is, and it is thanks to the ability and prudence of I think of the Conservative group on this council, and the ability of our financial officers, that we have been able to increase the value in our New Hernsburnus reserve.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman, this is a question directed at the Finance Officer. You have circulated a paper stating the amounts of paid to partnerships, and it seems, first of all, Pat, would you confirm that whereas the Council has been cutting back on expenditure year on for the last 6 years, actually in the last 5 years, most of these partnerships have increased in line with inflation, and as a result, my first question is: has the council zone staff suffered as a result of not being able to pay make increases in regard to inflation in regard to their own position, whereas increases are being made in regard to partnerships? And the second question is, if we're in a position where we are reducing our own staff, reducing our own expenditure, but paying for increased fees for partnerships, why is it that we are considering the creation of yet another partnership with other authorities in North Yorkshire? Where is the savings in that?
I'll take that, Paul, because it is more a political question. And I do hear what you're saying, but the point of partnerships is the resilience that it gives this council, and the ability, the wider breadth of working that we're able to carry out. I think we all know that we need to be able to work cross-authority with other authorities in partnership to increase our resilience going into the future. It's no good being insular. In today's market, we can't afford to do that.
Councillor Andrews, you've had two questions.
But no, this is a supplementary question in response to the answer that I've received, Chairman.
Okay, keep it brief, please.
But the question was, have the expenses of the have the fees of the partnerships increased while the savings that the council has had to make also increased? In other words, has one been at the expense of the other?
The political answer is that I don't think you can say one's at the expense of the other, because if we don't work in partnership with the LEP, for instance, or with Scarborough on our housing, we're not going to get that breadth of ability. No matter if we employed another person within this authority, we would not get the breadth of ability that we get through our partnership working. We cannot be insular. Whether Peter can give a financial response, or I don't know.
Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions. The first one is relating to the Chief Executive. I can't see where the charge we make to Selby and where the management charge for that are the savings that we're making in terms of the Chief Executive's salary and on costs, where it is, where it isn't. And if you could give me that. And would you like the second question now, or would you like to answer that first one first?
Just give it now, please.
Sorry, Chair, I didn't realise you were answering it even better. On that basis, we don't appear to have, if you turn to page 39 or page 80, if you want the big pages, on the senior officers' posts, we don't seem to have any reference there to the 130,000 plus paid to the director on departure, and surely that should be in there, otherwise it becomes meaningless if we make somebody redundant. And we can put down, I think it was stated in the policy committee that maybe the wording could be approved, but if we have the wording saying there is no intention to, and then it happens, and then it doesn't appear,
okay,
in what's happened.
We got your question.
Thank you, Chair.
In terms of the income from Selby for the Chief Executive's post, we've not made any provision within the 17-18 budget for that, because we haven't got a firm decision on whether that's going to continue going forward, as far as I'm aware. Secondly, yeah, I think, as I said at P&R, I think we could have been a bit more explicit within the pay policy around the corporate director's post. What I will say is that it will be completely transparent. We do have to disclose it in the statement of accounts, so we will have to disclose the post and the redundancy payment within the accounts for this year.
Councillor?
Supplementary, Chair. I'm quite happy that it will be transparent, but at the moment, if you look to see where it is in what is happened or what is going to happen or any other tense or verb to go with it, it isn't there at all. And if it's not there at all, it will struggle to be transparent. And on that basis, I would have thought on page 39 or page 80 that we need a line in there saying what has happened to the 130,000 that has gone. If it being in the accounts, yes, you'll be able to find it, but it should be in there now, because we've got posts in there that are saying no redundancy payment was made this last year and no intentions were for the next year, and that's exactly the same as it's still saying now and did last year, yet somebody's post has gone.
Councillor Clark, that's a long question.
It is, I realise it's an important large amount of money, Chair. On that basis, please have that amended?
Yeah, you can supply me with the amendments in writing.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. In Section 9, Impact Risk Assessment of the Budget, which is page 62, or little 21, and we look at, 63, there is a risk that the poor budget planning with decisions made without proper consideration or consultation, and the impacts would be major. I seem to remember last year we overshot our budget, and it was only by bringing in the new homes bonus to pay IEZ something like £400,000 that we managed to make ends meet. But it does say mitigation likelihood is not likely, and it comes out as the impact is minor. I would have thought that given last year's movement of monies might make this line rather more of a scary issue.
And And your question is?
Do you agree?
I think what you're talking about are two different budgets. Tonight we're talking about the revenue budget, and that's what we're looking at. The payments to IEASY were part of the transformation budget, which went through this council and was approved by council for spending on transformation.
Thank you. I think it came as a surprise to everybody when we saw the amount of money that had gone through, and I don't remember seeing it in the budget or in the accounts, but please draw my attention to it if it has been recorded and is there in the public domain.
You're asking where it appears in the accounts under the transformation budget, which isn't part of the revenue spending, which is what we're discussing tonight.
Okay.
Chair, can I just flag that it was actually flagged in bold in the financial strategy this time last year that we would need to bring a report back to committee to discuss the cost of transformation, which is what we did.
Okay.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that response.
Hello, is my speaker okay?
Yeah. The
financial strategy for this financial year, so the report that we brought this time last year, we included information within there in bold that we would need to bring a further report to this committee to discuss the cost of transformation, and that the balance of the new homes bonus reserve be ring-fenced until that point. And that's what we did, bring a report, and that's what we did.
Okay, thank you. Regarding amendments, can I remind members that if you want to propose an increase or decrease in any expenditure, you will need to identify the implications of that change on the remainder of the budget. Budget amendments need to be self-balancing. For example, generally speaking, increases in expenditure or reduction in the council's income needs to be funded in one of two ways, either out of council's reserves or environment from one budget heading to another. Furthermore, where any savings in expenditure have been identified, the member will need to state what those savings will be spent on or reducing council tax. Only one amendment can be dealt with at a time, with a vote being taken on each amendment before debate on another can begin. Councillor Cowling, can you now deal with item 11, paragraph Roman numeral 1, minute 47 of the Policies Resources Committee meeting on 2nd of February 2017, and the recommendations in the section 151 officer's report, please?
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to move the recommendation, which you will find on page 111 of your agenda. It is the PNR recommendation to Council. And I move that minute number 47 of the PNR Committee held on the 2nd of February 27 be noted and received by Council, and that Council adopt the recommendation in the section 151 officer's report, and that Council approve item 11, little 1, we're just dealing with the first little 1 at the moment, relating to the Council's revenue budget.
Sorry, is that second? Thank you, Councillor Arnold. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairman. I'm really pleased to be introducing this budget this year. I think the staff here have done a tremendous job in getting us to this position, and the £5 increase is something under 10 pence per week, which I think is a tiny increase. And I know when you're out on the streets knocking on doors and canvassing, the thing that people say to you is, I pay all this council tax and all I get is my bin emptied. Well, just to give you a flavour, I think we need to have those answers and be really aware of just everything that this council does for people out there. And one of the main things is we do provide democracy. The cost of conducting elections and running the register of electors is no small task. We help to keep the museums running in our area. We contribute to community parks and open spaces, sports and recreation facilities. We put a lot of effort into flooding, and we've supported flood defences in many areas of our district. We also support land drainage and their related work. Licensing is a huge responsibility for a small authority like this. All food premises, licensed premises for alcohol, they all have to be looked at by this council. We provide public conveniences, street cleansing, housing services that are second to none, support for vulnerable people. And that just gives you a flavour. That's by no means everything that we do for the people of Rydale. And I think, for once, you should hold your heads up and be really proud of what we do provide for the people of Rydale, because we are an excellent council.
Thank you. Okay, does anybody wish to speak in favour or against the motion or propose an amendment? I believe the Councillor Paul Andrews.
I'm just going to repeat the point that I, made in the questions I put to you about the partnerships, Chairman. We're told that there's breadth of experience that's being obtained. Well, that may apply to some of these items. It certainly doesn't apply to all of them. It doesn't apply to North Yorkshire Building Control Partnership. We used to be able to do that ourselves. Doesn't relate to the audit partnership. We were able to audit our own accounts once upon a time. We were able to do our own recruitment. We didn't need a breadth, but I can't see the reason why we should need any breadth of experience, seeing as our functions are actually gradually being eroded. And I'm extremely unhappy, Chairman, that what we're doing is we're increasing payments to partnerships in line with inflation all the time, but at the same time we're actually reducing our own expenditure and our own services, the ones which are actually directly provided by the council. And I know that it will be said that the same level of services will be provided. How do we know that those same level of services will be provided? Members haven't been involved in the reorganisation process at all. So it's all right saying platitudes, everything's going to be well, but they are only platitudes. There is no evidence. We have had no involvement. We have no experience as members. We have simply abdicated our responsibilities in that respect. And I'm not sure if I'm going to vote for or against the budget, Jem. But I have to point out that concern. And I hope members on all sides of the table of this council will take those concerns into account. We are really on a slippery slope of actually penalising our own staff for staying with us.
Councillor Clark.
I actually didn't think he was looking at me, but there, there we are then. I really do think a trip to Specsavers, Chair, may be useful if you're confusing Councillor Burr and myself. I really do.
It's a close-run thing.
Yes.
Councillor Clark.
Yes, I think Councillor Burr has a very good reputation in hairstyling. I'm not quite so sure whether my reputation is quite so exalted.
Don, you use is better, so, but please carry on.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I have an amendment here. I also wish to speak, but later, not now, in the main debate. But I have an amendment here to the 47PNR little 1E, if I've got it right, and that's on page 39, and I hope my clock hasn't started yet, because if it has, I'm only telling you what the motion amendment is. Page 80. Page 39 in the little numbers, page 80 in the big ones. It's the pay. It's under the pay policy bit, which is little e, one little e of 47 of PNR on page 111 in the big numbers. Can't imagine all that's right, but if it is.
Okay.
Right, now let me read across. If you've got that, the lines is director in the first column, salary 70,000, paid through normal authority procedures, which I presume is right, but we haven't got it in front of us, and then lots of nuns, not as in monasteries, but lots of N-O-N-E nuns. And then election duty, I presume, from memory I think that's accurate. Then another none. And then in the last column, this post was made redundant during the 1670 year at a cost of 130,000 plus. And I would hope you'd... I'm on page 80. This is why I asked for this not to be in my time. Page 80 in the paperwork, which is the PNR, which is the PNR, through you, Chair, Councillor Cowling, asked me a question, number 47, PNR, little 1, little e, i.e. on the pay policy. And the pay policy covers the senior officers and potential redundancy pay and how much they're paid and what allowances they've got, etc. and so on, most of which in this... in last year's director were fortunately none, 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 none and none.
I'm sorry, Chairman, but we none of us know where we are. Councillor Clark's obviously says something different to what ours says.
There should be a table on page 80.
Page 80, there's a
it's
table.
Little 39.
Little 39,
but it doesn't,
big 80.
Doesn't say anything about redundancy.
Appendix F.
Councillor Raper's on the same one as we are, that's good.
All right.
Doesn't mean we're right, no, it doesn't mean we're right at all.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I realise, answering the question, we are looking forward, but this is part of the pay policy in relation to what has happened, because it says on page 80, and I didn't think I'd be having to read this, it says the authorities normally policies regarding redundancy and early retirement to the post holder. And you could argue that it isn't the post holder, it is the post for redundancy, but we won't bother with little details. No payments were made in the last year. Now, I don't know which the last year is. If we're looking at next year's budget, is last year next year? Or am I even more confused? Because I would have thought last year from next year's budget was the year we are in. And if it isn't, I'm sure the 151 officer can explain to me how the council's time machine works.
Okay. Can you bring the amendment forward, please?
I was questioned. Are we happy that that is what I'm saying is accurate? That it is part of this year's budget?
Sorry,
it's part of the pay policy. It's part of one little lead.
Chair, I mean, my view is that the severance arrangements are linked to the post. The pay policy is the 17-18 policy, and any issues around corporate director will be picked up as a disclosure in the statement of accounts, as I previously said.
And on that basis, Chair, that basis. We had this discussion and question. It was clear earlier that sentence says no payments were made in the last year. Now, if you abolish a post and get rid of it and say, oh, that'll be in the accounts, I wasn't wishing to have an argument or a discussion with the officer, but if you put that, Chair, into the accounts, it doesn't appear anywhere last year or this year as a redundancy payment made out. And I know the City Liberals voted against the redundancy post because we didn't believe the 19 months or the 22 months. I think we said it was more likely to be 19 or 22 years. So it can't disappear from the budget statement that says what happens to senior officers' remuneration package, because it looks backwards and forwards at the same time. None are intended. That happened to be wrong last year. Well, that's fine, it was wrong. But on the other hand, none have been paid. If you were just
Councillor Clark, can you just make an amendment to it, that the wording that you would prefer?
Yes, Joe, I've got the wording here, but it was being discussed as to
okay, let's get on. Councillor Clark, did you want to speak, explain this amendment?
Thank you, Chair. Are you going to read it out? We're happy that everybody knows where we are and what it's saying now, because it is not the easiest subject to move as an amendment, let alone know if we do it. Is the whole of Council aware of where we are and what it is doing? I would happily speak to it, but I do think it needs a little bit of an checking that everybody knows where we are with it.
Okay, this is an addition of line on that page 39 or page 80, whichever you're reading, that a director salary of 70,000 paid through normal authority procedures. Then you've got non-election, non-duty.
It's just adding it.
This is adding this... post was made redundant during the 16-17 year and at a cost of 130,000. Is that that end bit the bit that you want added?
No, Chair, I want the whole of that, because we haven't... That's the director's post that's gone. We haven't got the whole of it. This is why I said we want to be very clear what I'm moving here. We have lost the director's post. and therefore it's a new line on that, a new line on that diagram.
Okay.
Well, and I if everybody doesn't understand it, they're not going to know what they're voting for or against or any other vote.
The addition of the line, I did say addition of the line, page 39.
Yeah.
So this looks satisfactory. Do we need? Okay. Okay. Okay, if you would like to talk about this.
Thank you, Chair. I apologise to everybody for its, you know, obscureness, but I don't think that we ought to be making a post redundant and making a post a payment out of 130,000 plus, and it only says 130,000 plus because I haven't got the exact figure, so that number it does in the amendment need to be whatever the exact number is. I don't think it is good for this council to be spending that amount of money and it not be clear in our budget paperwork. And that is an important part of the budget paperwork. It's even referred to in the motion that we're going to pass, the pay policy. So it can't wait till next June when the accounts are done and agreed, because it is part of our pay policy. And the government of various colours, yes, I think we've had three colours now while this has been getting itself embedded in, have said that top salaries and redundancy payments and golden goodbyes and so on and so forth should be publicly visible. And to have a statement that somebody was on last year where it said there is no intention of paying any redundancy money, words to that effect, the same wording as this year, and then it happened, and that action to have been lost off the list altogether, probably near to breaking the rules, if not actually breaking them. If this is put in there to show that that post sitting next to the Deputy Chief Executive was there, paid the 70,000, made redundant, that was the amount of money, move on. I can't see any reason why that shouldn't get the support of everybody in the statement of opening. It's a statement of what has happened, not a political decision as to what we would like to happen or not like to happen. We actually voted against it happening as a group. Some others are beginning to probably question whether or not it will save the money that was promised at the time. But on the other hand, this is not referring to that, other than to say that is what happened. Thank you, Chair. And we would like a recorded vote on it, please.
Anybody else? Councillor Thorne, seconder.
Thank you, Chair. I reserve my right.
Anybody else? Councillor Bailey?
Sorry, Chair. I must admit, not to be an accounting professional or those things, but I've seen a carefully made up budget. I've heard a qualified person say that this is satisfactory and our office's recommendation, and I'm inclined to stick with the advice and the choices that they've made. So without being an expert myself, I think I'm going to vote against changing what's proposed, Chairman.
Anybody else? Councillor Ives.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I completely agree that we need complete transparency when it comes to severance payments of large amounts. And I do think it's probably wise to include a section within the pay policy that details the severance payments that have been made, because when you set a budget and you make the severance payments halfway through that financial year, I do think you should reflect
what has happened, bearing in mind that payback period could be ongoing for several years in some cases, in the pay policy. However, what I am confused about is exactly what Councillor Clark's amendment is trying to achieve. So we are inserting one line relating to one officer. Now, we've had quite a few severance payments, some of which total over £50,000. The £130,000 redundancy cost is not the only redundancy cost that this council incurred during 16-17. So if you were going to amend the pay policy, I think what you should have done is inserted a new section where it's basically just detailing the severance payments that have been made, and just also stating that the similar terms would apply to the current officers of the council. But I do not think it is wise just to single out one post and put it in there, especially when it is a section that is looking at the current situation, not the historical situation. So if you were going to insert it, it better it be a separate section than what you are proposing, which I think is unnecessarily confusing, and instead of increasing transparency will instead confuse people who read the policy. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews.
Very shortly, Chairman, I'm just wondering if the officers have any objection to the wording that's being proposed, because if they haven't, and it's a statement of fact, I can't see why this debate on this issue should go on any further.
Mr. John.
A question, Chairman. Just to ask. Are the officers particularly concerned? If they are concerned, fair enough, then we've got to debate it. If they're not concerned, why are we talking about it?
Point of order. Point of order, we can't just make changes on the basis that officers are not concerned about an amendment. Otherwise, then what is the purpose of having members? Number two, I do not think it is wise to ask an officer their opinion on a political amendment. It's for the elected members, who are politicians, to debate these issues, not for the independent and impartial officers to get involved in the debate. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to speak?
Otherwise, it's back to Councillor Thornton.
Councillor Thornton, do you want to say any more?
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, I hadn't realised that transparency was going to be a political issue. And if money's been moving, it should be recognised as such and appear somewhere for public scrutiny. If it wasn't in last year's figures, and it's not going to be in this year's figures, where is it going to appear? The final column does make this reference to payments in the previous year. So either we strike out that from all of the pay policy and severance arrangements, or we leave it in and apply it to the to this post.
Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. Just shows you can get it wrong, doesn't it? I actually thought this would sail through without any problems at all or even any serious questions. But it's interesting that people are not understanding it, yet it's all been as clear as anything. I think that should leave people with a little bit of need for thought. It was said in the policy committee that the wording could have been better. It's as clear as daylight that this looks in both directions in relation to redundancy, last year and predicted for next year. And it is a requirement, not through you, Chair, for Councillor Ives, for all. It is not a question in relation to total redundancy. It's a question in relation to senior posts. and the top posts, I believe in those rules, the very top posts, maybe over 100,000 or whatever, are named posts, and then below that it's just the amount of money. And it isn't optional. This is not a good idea if we did it job. This is part of the rules. Now, that's not a problem. Might be to the Conservatives if it's brought in by the Conservative government, but that's up to them to struggle with. But very, very simply, all this amendment is doing is saying what happened in relation to these issues at this level of pay to the taxpayers' money in the last 12 months. And I can't see any problems with that at all. This section does not, Councillor Ives, through you, Chair, look at the current. It looks at forward and back. And if it's confusing, then it's a good job that I've raised it to try and get clarifying. I don't agree with asking the officers if they've got any objections. I'm sorry, Councillor Andrews, but bluntly, politicians should sort out what politicians disagree on, but officers shouldn't be dragged into the debate unless they are asked to, and I don't think that was the appropriate way to ask. So I'm quite happy not knowing the officer's answer to that. My belief is that this, as all the others are, looking forwards and backwards, this post is near the top, and therefore it should be in there, looking backwards, redundancy payment of, etc. Thank you, Chair. And we did ask for a recorded vote.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor Cowling.
Thank you. It's clear that the purpose of Councillor Clark's motion is to try and demonstrate that this council isn't being open and transparent. And what he's trying to say is that we haven't recorded the cost of this redundancy anywhere. And the appropriate place to have asked the question was earlier on in the meeting when we were asking questions, and he could have asked the appropriate officer where this payment was recorded, as I am absolutely 100% certain that it will be, because that is one thing we do have to do with all our financial dealings, is be absolutely transparent and honest. I do think it's playing with politics to try and add in a line at this late date. We've all had the agenda for over a week. If there were questions or concerns about this, Councillor Clark could have got in touch with the officer. He could have asked the question much sooner. And I think you're right, Councillor Ives, to make the point why this particular redundancy. I think it doesn't matter whether there's any objections to the wording from the officers at this late stage, and you shouldn't even be asking them that question once we're into political debate. So now I won't be supporting it, but what I will be supporting is that you know exactly where the cost of redundancies does appear in our accounts, as I'm quite positive it will do at the appropriate time.
Okay, thank you. Right, we move to the vote. Can you please cast your votes? On the amendment. This is on the amendment. And by the way, all votes and budget matters are recorded.
Chairman, that's 7 votes for, 19 against, and 2 abstentions.
Okay, so the amendment is lost. Back to the original motion. Moving to the vote. Okay, Councillor Clark. Yes, Councillor Clark. Okay.
Well, there we are then. Councillor Cowling thinks I should have raised it earlier. We did. We raised it in the policy and resources meeting under her chairmanship. But don't worry about it. We asked about that column and what it meant and so on and so forth. Got no support from them at all. Never mind. We were asking for it to be transparent, in line with government guidelines. And she's decided that she doesn't want to do transparency in line with government guidelines. She's going to use transparency in line with Rydale Council's guidelines. And this involves setting up a budget last year, which we're expected to vote for another one now. It was a balanced budget. And then we found ourselves in, I think it was about June, 3 months into the year. Oh dear me, we need to spend another 1.6 million. Now, that's transparent, but it's a very strange way of doing it, to say this is our budget and 3 months into it. And yes, obvious where the money came from the reserves, and obvious where it went, eventually. And I say eventually, because I asked Councillor Cowling how much was spent on the introductory fee for the consultants that got the 400,000 that wasn't in the budget. And I think somebody might have known, you know, because they were actually, those consultants were in through the door here the previous October. And on 400,000, not in the budget, and then we have to do a supplementary budget, if you like, or transfer money from the funds into the budget to pay for these advisors, for these consultants. Now that's fine, but it is not transparent. It is playing the game. And bluntly, if that is the way that budgets are to be done in this council, that is shameful. And it's only because there is a large amount of money there in terms of the new homes bonus that it's possible to get away with it. I will, Chair, yes, but it's not the right way to do it. And the amendment we've put that you've massively voted against is government guidelines for transparency, and it hasn't been done. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else wish to speak? Okay, Councillor Cowling.
Well, we're back to it, aren't we? My cup's half full, yours is half empty. What Councillor Clark has done throughout all this transformation process is to stop it. He's tried to stop the transformation going ahead, he's tried to stop us making the savings, and then he would have been able to say, look, you failed, and we've got through it, we're here, we've got a balanced budget in front of us, and all he can think of is to say that you're not being transparent in line with government guidelines. Well, I'd like to bet that we are. He asked me how much was spent on an introductory fee to iEasy. He's absolutely got a bee in his bonnet about the consultants who've been helping us with the transformation programme in this council. Had it not been for them, we would not have been successful in carrying out this transformation. No small council like this has the resource within its own staff to be able to carry out that type of transformation. And yes, doing that type of work, getting those sort of people to help you, is expensive. But the cost of failure would have been even worse to this council. It would have been even worse for the residents of Rydale. And that is what Councillor Clark is after. He's after trying to make this council fail, and it isn't going to do because of the good staff that we have and their ability to adapt to change. So I'm sorry, Councillor Clark, you've failed yet again.
Okay, can members please cast your votes?
Chairman, that is 22 votes for, 4 against and 2 abstentions.
Thank you. The motion is carried. Moving on to part B of this, as the Council has voted on item 11, revised paragraph 1, a motion to adopt the remaining recommendations in item 11, namely revised paragraphs Roman numerals 2, 3, 4, and 5 will relate to the requisite calculations and setting of the council tax for 2017 and 18. It will need to be moved, seconded and voted upon. I would suggest those items should be moved en bloc. Councillor Cowling, can you now deal with the remaining paragraphs in item 11, please?
I will, thank you, Chairman. You've had some late papers, the revised papers, which you should all have either on your iPads or in front of you. So I would like to move the adoption of the little 2 to little 5 on your agenda papers at item 11. Thank you.
Is that seconded? Councillor Arnold, thank you. Would you like to make a move a speech, Councillor Carling?
No, thank you.
Does anyone wish to speak in favour, against the motion or propose an amendment? Councillor Andrews.
Sorry, we haven't had questions, Chairman, but my question is, the £4.34 rise, what's that in percentage terms?
I'm sorry, Chairman, but it's been moved and seconded. We're into political debate. The time for questions is gone.
No, Chairman, you didn't ask for questions first. I mean, it's standard practice to ask for questions first.
Okay, I can ask Mr. Johnson to answer that.
I know off the top of my head that the overall increase at £5 is 2.72%. Just quickly doing a calculation, I think that will mean that the £4.34 is equivalent to 2.36%.
Okay, I think that's now been... we can go on to the vote for that now. Please, can you cast your votes?
Chairman, that's 22 votes for and 5 against. Sorry, 23 votes for and 5 against.
Thank you. The motion is carried. Okay, thank you. We now move on to item 12 of the agenda, at pages 113 to 140 on your papers, the Treasury Management Strategic Statement and Annual Investment Strategy 2017-18. I call upon Peter Johnson to present the report and answer any questions.
Thank you, Chair. This is, as you said, the proposed Treasury Management and Investment Strategy for next year. It's one of three reports we were required to bring before Council for approval. The report went to the last Audit Committee for scrutiny prior to this meeting. The recommendations within the report focus on three areas. Firstly, borrowing and investments. And in terms of borrowing, the current four-year capital programme doesn't rely on any additional borrowing beyond that previously approved. The full revenue cost of this level of borrowing is already built into the current year's budget. In terms of investments, there are no changes proposed to the methodology for assessing which organisations we invest with, and this is very much based on a risk-averse approach to lending. Investment returns are forecast to remain poor throughout 2017, 18 and 18, 19. And also we've taken
those forecasts into account when calculating investment returns, which ultimately impacts on funding for the capital programme. The second area of the report seeks approval for the minimum revenue provision policy, which starts at paragraph 6.11 on page 118. The MRP is a charge on the revenue account to pay for capital expenditure funded through borrowing. The recommended policy hasn't changed from last year, and that is to charge MRP commensurate with the life of the asset. The third area aims to provide assurance to members that the capital programme is affordable and that the financial strategy is prudent and sustainable. And this is achieved through the use of prudential indicators. The indicators start from paragraph 6.6 on page 117 of the agenda, and these figures are calculated from the proposed four-year capital programme, which forms part of the financial strategy. I'm happy to take any questions, members.
Any questions? I now ask Councillor Keel to move the recommendation set out in minute 77 from the Overview and Scrutiny Committee audit meeting on the 26th of January 2017.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't propose to read them out again. They're on paper in front of you on page 113. I would move those.
Do we have a seconder? Councillor Aikam. Do you wish to say any more movers?
No, thank you.
Okay. Does anybody wish to speak in favour or against the motion or propose an amendment? Okay, I think we can just go to the vote. Please can you cast your votes?
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Would Councillor Cowling, moving on to item 13, would Councillor Cowling please briefly introduce the recommendations in minute 48 from the Policy and Resources Committee on the 2nd of February 2017 on page 141 and the subsequent report brought to Council from the Head of Planning on page 147?
Thank you very much. Yes. I'm just a little bit conscious that we haven't had any questions, and I don't want to move and second this if there are questions from members.
Any questions for anybody? No. Please carry on.
Thank you. So I'd like to move the recommendation, which is on page 141 of your agenda. Can I have a seconder? Thank you. I think it's quite self-explanatory, and I am going to move an amendment. Luke, you're moving an amendment to that. You've got the amendment there, have you? Do you want me to print you a copy?
I've got the amendment.
Good.
Who seconded it? Councillor Arnold. Okay. Does anyone wish to speak in favour or against the motion or propose an amendment? Councillor Ives.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to add to the beginning of the recommendation that applications will initially be invited by number one, town or parish councils, or Rydal District Council, number two.
Is that seconded?
Confused because what I've got in front of me is that is an amendment, a typed amendment, and we started with the motion which is on page 141. Then before this meeting, we circulated with a typed amendment, and now but Councillor Cowling is not moving that typed amendment. But then I thought Councillor Ives was moving the amendment, and now he's
point of order, Chair. Point of order, Chair. I'm unaware of which standing order it's covered by, but we have received no amendment. And if there is some sort of an arrangement going on between the Chair of Policy, you've got an amendment, Luke, over there, and we've got one over there. We have not got four copies of this amendment.
Let me ask Councillor Cowling to.
Well, we haven't got one, but we
well, I have to say that Councillor Clark never gives me copies of his amendment. But also, Di, somebody's pinched my copy of the amendment, which was for Luke to sign at the pre-meet. Who's got it?
Can we have clarity, please, of which amendment we're talking about and who's proposing what?
Thank you. The recommendation which came from PNR is on page 141 of your agenda. And that is backed up by an officer report which sets out the criteria on page 148 of your agenda, and that is a suggested amendment to the criteria in there. And if you'd like, I can speak a little about why I want to have that amendment included in there. I had a meeting with...
like to hear, but I went for some reason to the PNR committee. I was expecting, as we'd agreed what we were doing at PNR, that the recommendation from PNR would be supported by the chair of PNR. Now, that might be a good starting point. I'm sure she has got somebody neatly lined up to do an amendment. That's not a problem. Life is like that. But can we hear what the views of PNR were? Because the leader of council is speaking as the chair of PNR at this point.
Councillor Cowling was trying to just clarify the issue. She wasn't speaking for PNR.
Clarify the issue, Chair, because at the moment we've got an amendment floating around, but we haven't even yet had heard the brilliance of PNR from the chair of PNR.
We have a recommendation from PNR which was supported at PNR and is still supported here at this council. At PNR, we didn't have the benefit of the following officer report. The purpose of the officer report is to try to expedite this arrangement for Section 106 monies so that we can get on with people being able to apply for the Section 106 monies. There are two strands to this. There are the recommendation from PNR, which hasn't been changed at all. The amendment that you have in front of you is a slight... Well, it's as much in front of you as the ones that John Clark has given you tonight, because I don't think he gave you all copies of that.
Councillor Cowling, can we just read it out?
Can we
have it read out? Councillor Ives.
Okay, just to try to bring to clarify what I'm doing. So we've got two reports before us this evening, is my understanding, Mr. Chairman. One is from the Policy and Resources Committee, and the second is from the Head of Planning. So it's two reports, and I understand that we'll probably vote on them both separately. The amendment which I wish to move is an amendment to the resolution by the Policy and Resources Committee. So the amendment is, and I'll read it out in full, what the wording of the policy and resources recommendation will change to. So it will change to the following. Applications will initially be invited... Okay, so it's applications will be invited initially by... Number one, town or parish councils... or Rydale District Council. Following submission of applications, to RDC, either directly or via town or parish councils, those applications will be appraised
by appropriate officers and in all cases will include consultation with the relevant town or parish council and ward members. Applications and appraisals will then be presented to the Resources Working Party for recommendation by the Policy and Resources Committee. If you look at the existing recommendation, I think it's quite similar wording. So may I apologise, Mr. Chairman, in hindsight is a wonderful thing, and in hindsight it would have been beneficial to perhaps had a printout of this amendment for all members. So I do sincerely apologise for that, and perhaps all members can learn from my hiccup there. And yeah, so perhaps as part of this learning lesson, which I'm experiencing.
It needs to be on the recording, Chair. Sorry.
Try again.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Excellent.
So perhaps as part of this learning process, which I'm currently going through in terms of getting amendments ready, we can also learn to check the audio equipment beforehand. So just in terms of this amendment, so I'll speak on it now. So does everyone understand what the amendment's saying?
Chair, if we've been asked that question, I need a little more clarity. As I understand the different routes it's coming from, it then comes into the officers, if I understand it correctly. Do the officers then pass all onto the Resources Working Party, or only the ones that they haven't saved?
So, right, I'll start to speak on the amendment, if I may, Chair, and then hopefully it will become clearer.
Has it got a seconder?
Yes, Councillor Arnold.
Councillor Arnold, okay.
Steve Arnold.
Yeah. Okay, so I think, first of all, it's a great thing that we're finally getting a process in place for dealing with Section 106, because previously there has been no policy and there has been no process. And I think that this has led to the accumulation of huge funds, which we must ensure are used for the purposes to which they were intended before we approach the deadline when they would have to be returned to the developers. Now, the sums involved are quite significant, despite the fact that Section 106 has now come to an end. So I think it's really important that we ensure that the monies are used for as good purpose as possible, but because of the sums involved, we need to ensure there is democratic oversight. I think that is absolutely essential. Now, as part of that democratic oversight and decision-making, I think there's a huge role for the ward members who were elected by the people to represent their area, and there's also a huge role for the town and parish councils. Both of those, and also there's a role even for the county councillors. But fundamentally, there is a big role for the elected representatives of that area. Now, what this amendment does is clarify that applications can be received by the town or parish councils. I know that Moulton and Norton have been working on an application process, which is welcome, and I think that should continue. The change at the Policy and Resources Committee was to provide democratic oversight, which I think was initially lacking. So the overall, throughout this process, by this report coming forward, the only change to the process is the final decision maker is not an apolitical chief executive who is not democratically elected. Instead, the final decision is made by a democratic body. And we must not forget that ultimately Viredale District Council is responsible for these Section 106 funds. That is our delegated authority, and it is a function that is allocated to this council to discharge. And so when people go to the ballot box, they are voting for you to discharge this function on their behalf. So ultimately it is right that democratically elected members have the final decision, although what is really important is we have consultation with a wide range of stakeholders, and this amendment is clarifying and emphasising the role of the town and parish councils, which has not changed throughout this process. The only change is the final part, where it's the Chief Executive voted the Policy and Resources Committee. Thank you, Mr Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Andrews?
Yes, Chairman, and I want to give notice that if this amendment goes through, I shall want to move a further amendment. Chairman, the position is that Morton and Norton Town Councils have been talking to officers of this council for at least a year, and we thought we had agreed a proposal which had officer support. And that was basically councils would make recommendations.
Councillor Andrews, you've gone very. Can you go back a bit?
Would make their recommendation to the Chief Executive. The Chief Executive would check to make sure that everything we've done was legally, politically, legally, policy wise, and propriety wise correct, and then let it go through. What we didn't take into account was the role of the elected board members. We therefore suggested, at least I suggested, that policy and resources that could simply be dealt with by ward members being included in the consultation and being given the power and authority, if they were unhappy with a recommendation going forward to the Chief Executive, for that matter to be referred to committee. Now, what this wording does, it goes some way to address our concerns, and I am grateful for that, but it still undermines the role of town and parish councils. The town and the towns and parishes in Rydale, they know what is best for their areas, Rydale District Council. The monies that come from development, which Rydale District Council has authorised, but which directly affects the services provided by
the Sorry, Councillor Andrews, it's getting very bad. Can you try somebody else's mic?
To go on, Chairman, my main concern about this amendment is that the decision is referred to the Resources Working Party. Now, the Resources Working Party is a working party. It is not a decision-making body. Members of it are sworn to secrecy, and so therefore members of the public, particularly other members of the Town Council, are unable to attend it. And that is my concern. If you're talking about democracy or transparency,
30 seconds.
That is not being achieved by this amendment. And I do have a further amendment to put forward, Chairman, which would, I think, remedy this situation. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, sticking with the First Amendment, Councillor Clark.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I hope I've heard this right. And I hope it is going to the, and no decisions will be made or vetoed before it goes to the Policy and Resources Committee. If that's right, then I haven't a problem with this. It seems a little cumbersome, but I can sometimes getting different sides together can become cumbersome. I find myself, and I keep sort of checking my thinking and memory here, but in agreement, massive agreement, with Councillor Steve Arnold. Because Councillor Steve Arnold and I, and I think Councillor Keel, sat on the working party that looked at grant applications. Now, I'm sure we got some wrong, but it was hardly political. It was, that doesn't, we did that, this doesn't, clear cut and thrust, but open and transparent between us. It then went to the Policy and Resources Committee, for the Policy and Resources Committee to decide yes or no. And much as Councillor Cowling and I have just the occasional disagreement on how the work should be run, I've never seen Councillor Cowling turn down somebody's request to come and speak for or against an application on a grants thing. So it has been open to all members, and it has been democratic to the extent that it goes to PNR. If it was going anywhere else or being decided by officers beforehand, or there was a sieve that said if it doesn't get past the officers' sieve, then I'd be saying no to this. Because what's happened with the grants is the grants have come in and officers have recommended that the panel has taken pre-resources working party, not taken this one forward. And I think on the occasional but rare occasion we've said to the officers, go back, have another look at this, because we like this, but we are concerned because you have come up with that. And then some of those have then come subsequently back. So if this is going to do that, and I take my political life in my hands here, Councillor Ives, through you, Chair, if that is what this is saying, then I can't see any problem in us supporting it. But if it's saying what the original recommendation was, that it would come from the parishes and towns, and the chief executive would decide, even if the decisions were the same, that's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to do it democratically with people involved. Yes, the parishes and towns are democratic. Little on the light side sometimes, but if I stand
three
here,
minutes.
You stand there, and we get elected. But I have one sentence, I apologise, Chair.
Nobody's listening.
You must be listening, Chair, otherwise you wouldn't know I was still speaking. On that basis, Chair, if it's going to be democratic, it's our money, it must be the democracy in this council. Thank you, Chair, and sorry for overshooting.
Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm really uneasy about this. This council has had a track record of successfully delivering the 106 monies. And regarding what we're talking about now, the new monies that's just come in, I went to many, many town council meetings, and many meetings, and one in particular that we had in this organisation, and as far as I understood, we came away with an agreement in principle of what was happening, and everybody was really happy about that. And now, yet again, as I've said, we seem to be changing our minds on the hoof, like the organisational structure. This is another one. We're changing it because we like change, I suppose. I, as a councillor, get very involved, maybe too involved. Maybe I shouldn't have been all them meetings to agree in principle what we were doing. And I'm sure many other councillors get involved. However, with all the cuts that we're having and all the workload and everything that is going on, is it really the right thing to do? We have a democratic process and it has been okay. So I'm not sure, are we trying to undermine our officers, or are we saying that we want to have more control? I'm not really sure. However, if it goes through, we have an amendment to make.
Okay, anybody else wish to speak? Okay. Do you want to sum up, Councillor Ives?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I disagree with Councillor Burr
statement that this council has been really successful when it comes to 106, because we haven't, hence why there's these large funds there that have accumulated over many years that are in danger of having to go back to the developers because they have not been spent. We are in that situation because there has been no process. So I think you just said, Councillor Burr, that we have a democratic process. No, we don't. We don't have any process. What this is doing is establishing a process that involves the town and parish councils as much as really legally possible, because ultimately it's Rydal District Council that has to make the final decision, because that is our statutory responsibility. Now, when we make that decision, it is important we take into account a wide range of views, which involves the ward member who has been elected for that patch, and it also involves the elected town or parish councils. Once that process is complete in terms of the consultation, there will be a recommendation, and then finally the ultimate authority will last with the Policy and Resources Committee. Now, in reality, the Policy and Resources Committee will always take into account the town and parish councils and the ward members' recommendations. It would be almost unforeseeable that I could imagine a situation whereby they would override what the town or parish councils had said. But ultimately, it is this council's statutory responsibility. It must, that decision, when, because we are involving huge sums of money, must have democratic oversight, and that's what this process is doing. So I hope that clarifies the situation, Councillor Clark, because what you said is happening. It will go before Policy and Resources Committee, and I'll reach out to you, Councillor Andrews. There will be huge consultation with the town and parish councils. They will be able to submit applications themselves through their own process, but ultimately it is this council that has that statutory responsibility. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to vote on this amendment now. Okay.
Didn't intend speaking at this juncture, because, but something you said, Paul, I really have to come back on. He accused the Resources Working Party of being sworn to secrecy. I've never heard anything so silly in all my life. Anybody can attend the Resources Working Party and very welcome to do so. They're not a decision-making body. Councillor Clark said it, Councillor Ives said it. I think it bears saying again, because it's in the paperwork. You obviously haven't read the paperwork, or you would know what is being said, that it will come through Resources Working Party to PNR, and PNR is the ultimate decision-making body. We need to get on with this. We need to get it out to the parish and town council so they can get on really quickly with it. That agreement in principle that you've talked about, Lindsay, this whole process and the amendments that we've brought have been put in place because we've tried to react to what the town councils have said, and this is the best position that we've been able to get to, which includes democratic oversight by members of this council. So I hope you all support this and let the town and parish councils get on with allocating this money.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the vote for the amendment. Councillor Ives' amendment.
Chairman, that's 25 votes for and 3 votes against the amendment.
So that is carried. Any more amendments to Councillor Andrews?
Yes, Chairman. This is just a small addition to the amended motion, and that is you delete the final sentence, and then you add the sentence: recommendations will be forwarded to the Council's Chief Executive for vetting purposes on propriety, policy and legality, and subject thereto, final approval. Recommendations made to the Chief Executive will be referred to the Policy and Resources Committee if requested by a ward member. And
thank you. Is there a seconder? Councillor Burr. Do you want to speak on this?
I do, Chairman. I just want to. I want to come back on a number of things.
Andrews, can you just come here at the moment, please, to clarify this? Okay, I'll read this out. So, on the amendment for councillor.
Could your members be a bit more respectful?
On the. Hang on, listen, please. I don't want to repeat this. On the amendment that Councillor Ives made, the last sentence, applications and appraisals will then be presented to the Resources Working Party for recommendation to Policy and Resources Committee. The amendment is to strike that sentence and replace it with recommendations will be forwarded to the Council's Chief Executive for vetting for purposes of propriety, policy and legality and, in brackets, subject thereto, close brackets, final approval. Recommendations to the Chief Executive will be referred to the Policy and Resources Committee if requested by a ward member. Councillor Andrews, you want to speak?
Yes, Chairman. Just coming back on a couple of things. I'm not in any way suggesting that there should be no democratic oversight, but I'm suggesting that the democratic oversight should be by the local ward members. The money we're talking about is not council money. It's money which has been given to the council to be held in a separate ring-fenced account for Section 106 purposes, for the purposes stated in the Section 106. It does not belong to the council. The council may have certain powers to decide what to do with it, but it is not the council's money. The Resources Working Party has been said many times. It's not a decision-making body. Well, if it isn't a decision-making body, why does the Resources Working Party have to be involved at all? If it makes representations, then it follows that most of the discussion is going to be behind closed doors in the Resources Working Party. And my understanding always was, whenever I went to the Resources Working Party, I was told that this was a meeting which I should not disclose to anybody what was being said at that meeting because it was so secret. Those are what I've been told. What I'm proposing now is that the main recommendation should be made by the town and parish councils in consultation with district councillors. Those recommendations should be made to the Chief Executive, and if any ward member thinks that any of those there's something wrong with it, that matter is automatically referred to Policy and Resources Committee. This, Chairman, will be in accordance with council policies which support local democracy, support outsourcing work which does not need to be done in-house, not wasting the council's time on decisions which can be made by other bodies, and also it is in accordance with the council's policy of transparency. Decisions of this kind, it should be possible for the town and parish council, any town and council parish councillor, to attend any meeting at which any of these applications are being discussed. That is the reason for my amendment, and I so propose.
Councillor Burr. Councillor Ives.
Sorry, I think I'm living in cloud cuckoo land. So we've got a recommendation where any Section 106 applications will first of all go to the Resources Working Party, which has got an agenda which is available to all members of the council, which all members of the council can attend. Those recommendations then go forward to Policy and Resources Committee, which is a public agenda pack. It's published on the website. Any member of the public can attend. All decisions are recorded. Any spending of Section 106 will be approved by that committee, and it will be detailed in the agenda pack, and that will apply to all Section 106 contributions. And yet what Councillor Andrews is proposing is that instead the decisions go to the chief executive to make, with no paperwork, with no meetings, with no democratic oversight, and it's only if the ward member decides to veto, then it has to go through that process. And yet that's supposed to be increasing efficiency, and that's supposed to be increasing democratic oversight. What? It's just unbelievable. Now, what we've got is a system that should work quite efficiently, like it does already for the community grants. It's open, it's transparent, it's involving all stakeholders, and finally that decision will be made by democratically elected people. And what you are proposing creates this convoluted situation where it's unclear what the process is, and it lacks transparency, and it lacks accountability. Honestly, Councillor Andrews, and what I will say as well to the members of your new independent group, take a step back and just have a look at this, because really, do you understand what you're voting for? Thank you.
Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. I didn't intend to speak on this amendment, but it just leaves me completely and utterly bewildered. Councillor Andrews says there's no democratic oversight, and in the next breath smacks the democratic oversight out of the ground with one easy blow. It's not the council's money. Absolutely right. None of this lot is the council's money. It's the public's money. But we are still responsible for it. We're responsible for it, whether it's council tax, whether it's business tax that we collect on behalf of the government, whether it's Section 106 money. The Resources Working Party is not a decision-making body. So instead of its weak decision-making powers, but it can recommend, it's going to go to the chief executive, a well-known decision-making body. Doesn't quite, to me, make sense. But the trouble with the Resources Working Party is it does its meetings behind closed doors. Well, I don't think the chief executive is likely to have, whenever somebody comes in from somewhere, the office door open and saying, come in, you can sit over there and watch this meeting. It's an interesting concept, but I don't think it would work for a chief executive post. And why would it go at the end of this process to the chief executive to be checked to see if it was legal, made sense, and or whatever? Because the process that we've got down here that's been in place, and I'm not going to say it a second time, Councillor Arnold, but has been in place going back some time, all those things as to whether it was legal and the way to do it and what we'd done before and how it fitted in were all there right early on in the process, so the organisation could be told, this doesn't work, this does work, or this doesn't work and you therefore need to do that. As opposed to this system, with its no democracy at all, is going to have that decision made right at the end of the process. It's been all the way round, and the chief executive comes along and says, this is not legal. Well, I don't believe that system would work. I don't find it makes any sense at all. I'm disappointed because I thought that Councillor Ives here had moved towards Councillor Andrews' position from PNR, because my concern was it should come from the community groups to the council rather than to the parishes and towns, and I've gone, okay, fine, let it go to the parish and towns and then come here. That's not a problem. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Bailey, did you want to speak?
I think it's all been mostly said several times, Chairman.
Then that's sufficient then, is it?
I said mostly. There's one small point which I think maybe the Council's forgetting, is that the 106 money is there specifically as part of a planning application to mitigate or to balance a specific need. And so, members are not free to do what they want with it. They're bound by the constraints of that decision. At the same time, having that pointed out, where it says that applications will be appraised by appropriate officers, I'm sure that that will give adequate steer as to what the boundaries for that are. And I can't see, we already have something which is a bit of a triumphant process, adding more to it, I can't support. I'm kind of pleased that 106 is phasing out, Chairman, listening to this lot.
Okay, anybody else wish to just say anything? No? Do you want to sum up, Councillor Burr?
Yes, I'd like to sum up, thank you very much. So, the need regarding the monies, as we all know, has come from our large towns, whether we like it or not. Moulton is inundated with new houses. I'm not saying that we don't need them, but inundated. Pickering's got a huge development coming, and Norton is absolutely inundated with new houses. So we all know that, don't we? And we all know that if we do our job and we get really, really involved with our towns and parishes, we know exactly what's needed and exactly what needs to be done. So, firstly, it's absolutely right that the 106 has gone, and now in planning we are dealing with the SIL, and we still have this money to deal with, so we need to sort it out. And it is disappointing, I think, that contrary to what everybody is saying, is that it's disappointing that we're discussing it tonight. And I just feel that we have lost the integrity. And what seems to be said in all this is that we're stressing that members must have more involvement. Members must do this. Well, I don't think I can have any more involvement. And I'm sure if we're all doing our jobs right, we're all having the right amount of involvement. So we know exactly what our towns and parishes are looking for. We know where the 106 is targeted for. We know absolutely everything. It's for our local community. It's for enhancement. So we know that. And this amendment is a facilitator, really. I'm not quite sure why you actually think that there's something wrong with this amendment, but that's absolutely entirely up to you. And the democratic oversight is with our towns and parishes. They are well equipped with our input and with our help and advice to decide and say it doesn't have to come to committee and then to committee and then to another committee. It doesn't need to do all that. Correct, it is public money and it needs to be spent quite quickly. However, I just think the process has become cumbersome, involved, and really we needn't to have gone to all this. But that's my opinion, and obviously you'll make your decision.
Councillor Andrews.
Yes.
It's not an issue of democratic accountability that we're talking about. What we're talking about is control. This council must control what goes on in other councils. No account is taken of the fact that parishes and town councils are themselves democratically accountable, and really they are the people who know what goes on the ground. How, if it comes to resources committee, how is a member who is a member of Pickering going to know what is best for Moulton? How is a member from Sheriff Hutton going to know what is best for Norton? It doesn't make sense, Chairman. We're in this situation. We're in a much wider sphere. Westminster always knows best, and we know that Westminster doesn't know best. And in this case, what we're saying is that the local people do know what is needed in their communities. Rydale is not necessarily the best person to make that decision, and to give Rydale the power of overriding the district parish councils and the town councils' recommendations because something is put in front of them, that makes an absolute nonsense, and it undermines the towns and parish councils. And I would therefore, Chairman, say that would you please let the parish councils and town councils have their heads under the supervision of the officers to make sure they do not actually abuse their position, and let them make this decision because they know what is best for their parishes and their towns.
I am going to have to come back, Chairman, as okay. And I'll do it very quickly, I hope. I'm appalled by some of the things that Councillor Andrews is saying. He's saying that we want to stop the town and parish councils making their own decision. This is exactly the opposite. This is designed to hand the power to them to handle these applications. I don't know why you're being so, why you don't understand what is happening. You're saying that we want to take control away from other councils. I know you're not really into partnership working and you don't like working with other people and you think it takes work away from our staff here, but you're going to have to get used to delegating things to town and parish councils, which is exactly what we are doing here. You're saying we're trying to take the democratic decision making away from town and parish councils. RDC already has that responsibility. At the end of the day, we have that responsibility, but we are asking the town and parish councils to take on that mantle.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the vote on that amendment from Councillor Andrews.
Chairman, that's 3 votes for and 25 against.
So the amendment is lost. So going on to the substantive motion, as amended, Councillor Cowling. No. Can we go straight to the vote then? Straight to the vote.
Chairman, that's unanimous.
Thank you. The motion is carried. Okay. Agenda item 14, to consider for approval the recommendations in respect of the following Part B committee and subcommittee items, starting with Planning Committee, 20th of December 2016, minute 112, Moulton Food Enterprise Zone. Would Councillor Frank please briefly introduce this recommendation?
I'd like to move the recommendation from Planning Committee on page 167. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Councillor Frank? Sorry? Seconder, sorry. Anybody second that? Thank you, Councillor Jack. Are there any questions for Councillor Frank? Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. I'm nervous of this, but I'm nervous of it through ignorance, I suspect, rather than necessarily anything wrong. And that is, could we have an explanation as to what happens while our planning guidance, directions and things change? How is that applied to this area if it's been given the planning permission that it looks as though it's been given? As I said, it may be a high level of ignorance there, through you, Chair.
Officer's good.
This is Mr. Dan Wheelwright who will answer this question.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Yes, it's in effect a local development order is the grant of a permission for the development within certain parameters. So effectively they need to apply for send prior notification to the council to say does it meet with the parameters set out in that local development order, yes or no. But it is in effect a planning permission for the development. In this case there is already an outline planning permission for the development, but the local development order is full permission as long as it meets with those parameters.
Yes, Councillor Clark.
Yes, I thought I might not be that far away with my concerns. So if we were to have, and let's take something nice and clear cut, the government woke up and decided it was going to be in favour of renewable energy, and all industrial and commercial and agricultural development should have...
Councillor Clark, this is just questions, so
it is,
please keep
put
it
where that is why I'm asking the question, Chair. If you had a change of policy so that all buildings had to have, all buildings that were to be given planning permission were to have 25-50% renewable energy produced on site, would a development, if this is only half built at the time, would the second half have those planning restrictions put on it, because they wouldn't be in the purview or whatever it was you said that we're giving them to within which to build? I think it is a question, Chair, you know.
It's just the length that I try to watch.
Some questions are a little longer than others by definition, particularly when you have a complex
Thank
subject
you.
That even the person proposing the motion doesn't understand either. So I don't apologise too much for being ignorant.
You can't impose new requirements retrospectively on a development that's already been given effectively a permission. Yeah. So, yeah.
Chair, does that apply therefore to this site ad infinitum? In other words, if there's a building taken down in 20 years' time and another one put up, does this same non-planning rules apply to it?
In this case, this is the establishment of the enterprise rather than sort of replacing buildings. Obviously very early stages as it's obviously being developed now in terms of obviously the infrastructure being put in, so it is about what's built now. But you can't, I mean, like a planning permission, you get that planning permission and you have conditions on it. It's exactly the same process. You wouldn't retrospectively be able to impose anything new on that. It's exactly the same case for this, the local development order. Yeah.
Okay, Councillor Thorpe, a question?
Thank you, Chair. Long ago, long before I was on the Planning Committee, I think this was conceived, and I seem to recall that moving the cattle market was an integral part of the whole process. Has the moving of the cattle market been part of the conditions for the development of this site, or is it just an aspiration, a hope that it might move?
Yeah, we can't, it doesn't specify a cattle market as it, all we can specify is the nature of the uses, and there's a definition of the types of uses that are acceptable on the site, and there's lots of parameters around the height of the building, for example, that are set out in the design code. So there's a number of conditions, and the design code which also says the sort of the size, the bulk of those buildings. So it can't in itself impose, you know, the requirement for the cattle market to move. It enables it to happen under this, but we can't specifically just refer to that alone, if you see what I mean. It's a description just covers the nature of the uses that are acceptable as a sort of agri-food site, which is obviously with the reason for it being the food enterprise zone.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Wheelwright. Councillor Frank, do you wish to make a mover speech?
I'm going to the this item is a policy report which recommends the adoption of the local development order for the Moulton Food Enterprise Zone project. The local development order, once adopted, will grant planning permission for the types of development specified in the order.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to speak in favour? Or Councillor Clark?
I'm still, and I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to ask more questions. But this appears very strongly to me that we're taking a large area, very close to Moulton, and in effect, not in the short term, because there'll be nothing in the parameters and the guidelines now that wouldn't fit the current day parameters and guidelines, I suspect. But if in 30 years' time, 20 years' time, we are saying all new development has to have 50%, 100% renewable energy, that won't apply to this. Because as long as it's a agricultural and agricultural food and commercial and storage and so on, and within a certain height, etc., i.e. the rules we set down, then I can't see how we deliver that. And I'm very nervous. It's fine in the short term, maybe fine in the medium term, but in the long term, in planning terms, it's a bit like building with asbestos. Because, you know, it was fine then. Building regs might override this. We haven't had an answer to that. And I hope the mover of this will be able to reassure me that we're not doing something that's very neat and tidy now, and probably cost-effective rather than having lots of planning applications. But, in the longer term, how do we, the local authority, whoever that is, it could be called Scarborough Local Authority or Hull and whatever, but how do they control the planning regulations for this area down the track in the long term? Because if I don't get a satisfactory answer, and that's not a criticism of the officer in any shape or form, if I don't get a satisfactory statement as to how that is covered, then I'm not prepared to vote for it in any shape or form. But as I said at the beginning, Chair, it may well be my ignorance that's causing this, but at least I'm asking questions that the spokesperson for this, the Vice Chair of Planning, is saying she doesn't understand, so maybe I'm not as ignorant as I thought I was, but probably not quite as ignorant as you may think I am. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Cowling.
Thank you, Chairman. This food enterprise zone has been established and is here before you tonight in order to help delivery of our Rydale Economic Action Plan. Moulton itself is becoming known as a food capital of the country. It's getting known internationally, let alone nationally. Anything food related is really important to Yorkshire and to our local enterprise partnership in particular. It is the only site in Yorkshire. It is the only designated food enterprise zone in Yorkshire. We're not crystal ball gazing. We can't. I can't tell you what will be happening on that site in 50 years' time, just as you can't tell me that the houses that we're building today, whether they will still be here or whether we shall need them or whether we shan't need them in the future. But at the moment, we're doing the best we can to encourage food-orientated business into this area. We've got the ferry site just down the road. We've got the University of York, all very much food-orientated agriculture. So this is our attempt to grab our slice of the cake. The access to the A64 is brilliant. It saves traffic going into Moulton. I think the whole project is really, really good for Rydale, and I hope that everybody can support this.
Anybody else? Councillor Frank, would you like to sum up?
Just to allay Councillor Clark's fears about this, the local development order can be revoked or amended at any time. So it's not set in stone. It can be revoked or amended at any time. Once in place, it provides a strong incentive for business growth on the food enterprise zone site. And it's entirely consistent with the council's economic development. And I'll move that the local development order is adopted.
Okay, I'd like to go to the vote now. Please cast your votes.
Chairman, that's 25 votes for, 1 against and 2 abstentions.
Okay, the motion is carried. Sorry, this is moving on to overview and scrutiny committee, minute 78. Would Councillor Keel please briefly introduce this recommendation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the recommendation is, as you have in front of you on page 239, the appointment of the sector-led body public sector audit appointments to appoint external audit services for Rydale District Council from the 1st of April 2018. So the recommendation is in front of you, and I would move adoption of that recommendation.
Is there a seconder?
Yeah.
No, Councillor Aiken. Thank you. Are there any questions for Councillor Keel? Okay, Councillor Keel, would you move the recommendation?
We'll move it. I have nothing further to ask.
Anybody want to speak in favour or against the motion or propose an amendment? Okay, members, please cast your vote.
Chairman, that's 26 votes for and 2 abstentions.
So that's carried. Moving on to the minute 4 monitoring officer's report regarding complaint alleging breach of members' code of conduct Would Councillor Keel please briefly introduce this recommendation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the Council has before it five recommendations on sanctions from the Corporate Governance Standards Subcommittee, which met on the 9th of February 2017, into the hearing of a Code of Conduct complaint against Councillor Raper. The complaint was about Councillor Raper voting twice on two occasions at the Council meeting held in this chamber on the 8th of December 2016. Members will have seen the minutes of the subcommittee meeting at pages 269 to 272 of the council agenda this evening. The minutes give details of the finding of facts, the breach of the code, and recommendations to members on sanctions. And just as a reminder, as part of this introduction, council is only being asked to consider the recommendations on sanctions this evening, those recommendations from the subcommittee. Thank you. And we'll take questions and try and answer them if members have them. Thank you.
Okay, any questions? Councillor Jowett.
Thank you, Chairman. It's just a point of
information. Can you stand, please?
Sorry, my apologies. Breach of conduct. it's just a point of information request, really. Who was the independent person, and are we allowed to know that, and on what basis was he, she chosen?
Yes, you are allowed to know that. It is Ms. Jill Baker who has acted as an independent member of subcommittees on these sort of proceedings for some years. She is part of the committee.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. Recommendation B, that the group leader be asked to suspend Councillor Raper from committees for 6 months from the date of this censure. I won't ask the question.
Any other questions? Councillor Keel, do you want to say more?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, this evening I propose dealing with the recommendations on sanctions, which relates to the censure motion first, and split the recommendations into two parts. After Council has dealt with the censure motion, I propose moving the other recommendations en bloc. The text of the censure motion is set out at the foot of page 271 and the top of 272. And it is as follows. Council is aware that Councillor John Raper voted using electronic voting units on two occasions during the meeting of full council on the 8th of December 2016. Council notes that these actions constitute a breach of the requirement in the Members' Code of Conduct to behave in accordance with all our legal obligations, alongside any requirements contained within the authority's policies, protocols and procedures. Council notes that these actions are also contrary to a number of the principles set out in the Members' Code of Conduct, namely selflessness, integrity, openness, honesty and leadership. As such, these actions are wholly unacceptable and inappropriate, damaging to the reputation of this council and public trust and confidence in the integrity of its democratic decision-making processes. Therefore, the Council hereby censures Councillor John Raper for his unacceptable behaviour and actions in breaching the Members' Code of Conduct. Mr. Chairman, I move the censure motion against Councillor John Raper.
Is that seconded? Councillor Aikam, do you wish to say anything? No. Does anybody else wish to say anything? Councillor Clark.
I don't know where I can seek your help, Chair, where I wish to put in an amendment. And I'll give you the wording of the amendment, it's not long. And I suggest it could go down as D, but that may be the wrong place. That Councillor Raper broke the honesty part of the Code of Conduct. Little one, Councillor Cousins did not ask him to vote for him. And two, Councillor Cousins had left the room when Councillor Raper stated that he, brackets Councillor Cousins, was present. Now, I don't know where to put that in, but this process has missed out that part.
Hang on, I'd like to... Let the council solicitor to answer this, please.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just make a contribution at this point. The issues that Councillor Clark raises relate to facts. The subcommittee has dealt with three matters altogether. The first matter are the facts. They've made findings of facts. The second matter is a finding of a breach of the code. The third matter is a recommendation to council on sanctions. The council is only considering the sanctions, the recommendation on sanctions, and the first part is the censure motion, which has been moved by Councillor Keel. The matters that Councillor Clark refers to are facts. He's wishing to insert statements about facts in the censure motion. That has already been dealt with by the subcommittee, and it is actually in the minutes of the subcommittee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. It already says in the facts that Councillor Cousins did not ask Councillor Raper to vote for him and was not present in the room. So we're not discussing the facts. Facts are there. But we are saying that Councillor Raper, Council is aware that Councillor Raper voted using two electronic voting units on two occasions. Now that's a fact come on into the following censure motion. And I've no problem with that. And my concern is it's not to get it, John, in any shape or form. My concern is, I always believe it is unfair when someone is accused of something, and it looks in this case as though it may well be carried through that they have done that something, that everything should be cleared up out of the way. And we've got here in the report that statement. I have other ones that I raised in the meeting that were not down as facts. I was disappointed, but, you know, that's fine. I can keep on swiping at Councillor Raper across the council chamber and he may well swipe back. But it says in here, under the facts, that Councillor Raper had asked, because he told us he had asked, Councillor Raper, Councillor Cousins had asked Councillor Raper, and that Councillor Cousins was in the room. Now, in the heat of the moment, I can fully understand how all that's happened. That's me speaking on his defence. But it needs to be put into here. And we've got the lesser, in my opinion, offence of using two voting machines. You could have picked up the wrong voting one, or Joy could say to me, press my button before I don't get back, before, and there's a vote taken on us. But it was telling council to me, and there was indignation in this council on that. Now, on that basis, I can't see why. I hear the lawyer's advice, but I can't understand why, if it's in the facts, I'm not questioning the facts, I'm saying that that part of the breaking of the code of the honesty was in relation to the statement impugning Councillor Cousins, not pressing the Councillor Cousins' button. Now, on that basis, it's in the facts that are in here. I'm not bringing anything in new. I'm asking where it should be put. Now, I'll put it where I want to put it, and I've amended it in that direction if necessary, but I would have thought it was better if it was put somewhere it should be. It's in the facts, it is clearly breaking the code, and it ought to be in there. It's all done, it's all out here now, but it's not in the actual statement.
So can we have your amendment written down, presented, please?
while somebody's looking at that, I did suggest that it went in as D, little 1 and little 2, but it could equally go in as another paragraph into A.
Okay, Councillor Clark, with discussion, this is more suited to become in the second part after the censure motion, because the second bit is B, C and D, etc. That would be fit. It would fit better in there.
You're putting it into where, Chair? You put it into D. Yeah, that's fine. I'm happy with that.
So, on the censure motion, does anybody want to speak further on the censure motion? Councillor Ives.
Alert, Mr. Chairman, that an extraordinary meeting of council is called for the beginning of March. If this censure motion is passed, would it mean that, in turn, that the extraordinary meeting could not go ahead because we would be revisiting a decision of council within a period of 6 months?
Yes, parts of it.
Anybody else wish to speak? Okay. Voting on the censure motion. No, the censure motion. Just the censure motion. We'll come to the amendment.
Councillor King said she's dealing with this separately.
Yes. Censure motion alone.
Chairman, that's 24 votes for and 3 abstentions.
So that is carried. So now we move on to the rest of the points and the recommendations to council. Councillor Keel.
Chair, this may not be the time to ask, but are all the votes there as votes? Because it doesn't seem to be the same number of votes on there as there are people in the room. But then that might just be me having a nervous twitch as to what's happened before, and I hope to ... I'm wrong.
Councillor, Mrs. Shields, are you I know, because the vote has been taken. Do you feel strongly about the fact that you'd like us to take a second vote? Are you happy to go with the vote that's already?
Yes,
Let's go with it. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. So that's carried. Councillor Keel.
Chairman. So moving on to the second part of the recommendations from the Governance Standards Subcommittee, as on page 272 of tonight's agenda. So these are as follows. That the Leader of Council be asked to suspend Councillor Raper from committees for 6 months from the date of this censure motion. C, that Councillor Raper be required to apologise to the Chairman of Council and all members of Council for his conduct. And additionally, the subcommittee recommended that practices around electronic voting, and we've had lots of fun with that this evening, and time management at full Council meetings to be improved as follows. A, any member leaving a meeting early should notify the Chairman when they depart and return their voting unit to the front of the room, and that the time of their departure should be recorded in the minutes. And B, that the overview and scrutiny review that's already underway into the start times of meetings should also look at the efficient running of proceedings at full Council to include the length of meetings. Mr. Chairman, I move these recommendations.
Anybody seconded? Councillor Aitken. Okay, we can now do the amendment as proposed by Councillor Clark. Do we have a seconder for the amendment? Councillor Thornton. The amendment, shall I read it out? This is to add on to behind C in this section, a D, that Councillor Raper broke the honesty part of the code of conduct. Councillor Cousins did not ask him to vote for him. Councillor Cousins had left the room when Councillor Raper stated that Councillor Cousins was present. Okay, I think this is a point here which I could ask for the solicitor to
explain
the legal aspect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The proposal is to add little D, which comprises the following text. That Councillor Raper broke the honesty part of the code of conduct. That relates to whether or not there's a breach of the code, which the subcommittee has dealt with. So technically that is not a sanction. The second point, the second suggested addition is Councillor Cousins did not ask him to vote for him. That, Mr. Chairman, is a fact. The subcommittee has already dealt with the facts and recorded the facts, and that is not a sanction. The third item is that Councillor Cousins had left the room when Councillor Raper stated he was present. Again, Mr. Chairman, that is a fact. It's not a sanction. And the only thing that members of this council have been asked to consider are recommendations from the subcommittee on sanctions. Mr. Chairman, I leave it in the hands of Council to take that into account.
Okay, Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. I hope the clock will start when I've answered the lawyer. Yes, it is a fact. It is a fact. It is a fact. And it is a fact. And it's so much a fact that it's in the fact stage in the papers here. But so was the statement that Councillor John Raper voted using two electronic voting machines. That was a fact. No different from this other. And I can't understand why I've just one bit been missed out, asked for it to be put in, drive on, and stop rubbing the salt. But on that basis, I cannot see a single reason for missing out part of what it should be the fact. I would have quite liked, and this is why I asked advice from the top table, and slowly it's becoming clearer that probably the better place to have been put it was be at the beginning in the censure motion next to the two voting machines. But the advice we got from the person who's just advised against doing it, and if he wasn't asked, then he should have been, was that it would be best done as D little one, D little two, as you said, Councillor Clark. That was the chair's, basically the chair's statement. So I asked advice on it. I did what the advice has asked. And now the advice I'm getting is what you've done is wrong. I have struggling coping with that. It makes the Section 106 debate earlier on look perfectly straightforward and simple. So on that basis, Chair, I move this amendment. It's got to go in there somewhere. So as to John Raper has then got the position. He's done what he's done. That's it. Slate cleared at whatever time. Message out of the way. Do you want a beer, John? Which is the way it should be. But to have something there that is not in those recommendations and things is going to leave it hanging. And it shouldn't be left hanging. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Keel.
Yes, I'm afraid I can't support this amendment. As Chair of the Committee, I have to say to members that this process was carried out in great detail and the proper procedure was followed. I dispute the fact that you're saying that this will not be on the public record because it is in the facts part of the paperwork. It's in the all detailed in the investigative officer's report to Council, which you have seen. And the actual censor motion says, Council notes that these actions are also contrary to a number of principles set out in the Members' Code of Conduct, namely selflessness, integrity, openness, honesty, which is what you're referring to, Councillor Clark, and leadership. So I think it's already there. I do not think we need to change this. And as the Council Solicitor has said, and I have to thank the Council Solicitor for guiding us all, the subcommittee, through this process, because it was a difficult one, and I entirely trust his opinion on this. We are asking members to vote on the sanctions, not on the facts of the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cowling.
Yes, I won't be supporting this amendment. I must say I did expect amendments to come forward tonight on this, and I wasn't disappointed. We went through a very robust process in order to arrive at the decisions and sanctions that you have in front of you tonight. And I think there's nobody in this room who would argue against the recommendations that are here tonight. Absolutely unnecessary and wrong to add in the facts that you're trying to add in. They are there in the paperwork. And I thank our monitoring officer for his advice that they are just that. They are facts. Not sanctions, and not appropriate to be in this section or any section. I think we had an exceptionally good independent person there throughout the whole process, She's very concerned that this council is making decisions at 10:30 at night and the effect that that has on decision making, and I hope we can deal with that through the second part, the little A and little B, when it goes to our overview and scrutiny committees. But no, I can't support this amendment.
Councillor Ives.
Thank you, Mr Chairman. When I initially made the complaint against Councillor Raper, one of the breaches of the code of conduct that I asserted was one of honesty. There has been a full, rigorous and robust investigation process, and I am very satisfied with that. And one of the outcomes was a finding of fact that there had been a breach of the code of conduct, and there was an issue of honesty. So I therefore do not understand the purpose of Councillor Clark's amendment, because it is adding to what has already been established. Now, I think what Councillor Raper did at the last council meeting was dishonourable, and certainly the comments made afterwards were probably less than reflective of the situation than was ideal. However, this has all come to light through that robust and rigorous investigation process, so there is no point revisiting that. Instead, I think what we need to do is vote on the sanctions and then move on. Thank you, Mr Chairman.
Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Thank you, Chair. Having looked through the recommendations in the sanctions stage, if this amendment isn't accepted, quite simply, we are not sanctioning Councillor Raper for dishonestly claiming that Councillor Cussons asked him to vote on his behalf. There will be no sanction for misleading every member of this council. No sanction whatsoever, because there will be nothing in there if this amendment isn't carried. So a member's quite happy that there will be no sanction for lying to the council.
Anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Clark, do you want to sum up on the amendment? Or, sorry, Councillor Thornton.
Thank you. In the recommendations sanction stage, we see the two electronic voting units, but none of the dishonesty. Dishonesty which could have implicated Councillor Cousins' MBE in an act of dishonesty himself. So either we remove the electronic voting units from little A and don't mention them at all and don't mention the dishonesty, or we have them both in there. I can't see how we can separate the two and have one in and not the other.
Councillor Clark.
Thank you, Chair. Well, it's straightforward and simple. We've got here in the fact stage two lots of facts, one about the dishonesty and one about the voting machines. We come to the sanctions and we have the voting machines. I asked where this amendment should go. The advice I got was where it should go. Having said, oh no, it should be in the facts, nobody's disputing it in the facts. I wish it hadn't been. And then we find ourselves in the position that everybody's saying the process was absolutely fine. Take no notice of the process. Look what he's written down here. Two things went wrong. Several bits and pieces went wrong, but two things went clearly wrong. One was the honesty as to what happened and why in relation to Councillor Cousins, and the other was the voting of the two machines. And in the sanctions, we refer to the vote of the two machines. Now, if this decides, The flat. I don't like using words that others have used in here. I don't like accusing somebody of dishonesty. But that's what this small subcommittee was supposed to do. He had two things to do, and he only did one of them. And we as a group, and I hope this wouldn't be on group lines, we as a group actually think that impugning Councillor Cousins is probably a bigger problem than pressing two buttons on two machines. We'll be calling for a named vote on this amendment, but I can't see why you're not all saying the logic of the paperwork is there. Let's do it. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's go to that amendment.
Chairman, that's four votes for, 20 against, and four abstentions.
Okay, so the amendment is lost. Okay, going back to the original.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can I make an amendment? Sorry. Are we now doing the rest of it?
Are we now doing the rest of this all the way through to B at the bottom?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. In that case, I'd like to make amendment that B, section B at the end is deleted, and that this proposal that's proposed to look at the efficient running and proceeding at full council of full council. To include the length of meetings, be referred to the Overview and Scrutiny Committee alone. No, it isn't. Do you wish me to carry on?
Yes, please, just explain that better. Right.
At the moment, it's referred into the current review, into the start times of meetings, and I'd like to make it separate. So that it goes, we've already had a referral regarding start times of the meetings, and I would like to have this as a second referral independent of the other.
I'll second that, Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Can you write that down?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a switch round, is that right? A flipping it round.
I've taken out the section referring to the. I've taken out the section referring to the start times of the meetings.
Members need to attend and listen to.
Yeah. So this is little the end bit of the lot.
Little B.
Being removed, and that the proposal to look at the efficient running of proceedings at full council to include the length of meetings be referred to the Overview and Scrutiny Committee.
Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate?
Thank you, Chairman. I believe that this motion regarding the running of the meetings should be taken separately from...
This is an amendment, not a motion. Carry on.
Sorry, this amendment. Hmm. Sorry. Should be taken separately from the timing of the meetings The overview scrutiny committee has already discussed the proposal recommendation that we take the initial part, the timing of the meetings, and we made a decision to produce a report which outlined the facts which can then be brought back to full council and not make recommendations. And I believe that the this latter item will require recommendations to be made within the report, any report which is made. And it seems appropriate then to take them as two separate items. Thank you.
Councillor Andrews?
I'll reserve my position, Chairman.
Councillor Ives?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to speak on the item B anyway, which is the part to do with the efficient running of meetings, because I think one of my frustrations from reading the peer review is that we do not seem to have learnt any lessons from it. For example, the peer review criticised officers speaking at council meetings because it drags on, it extends the debate, it gets them involved in the political sphere. And what have we been doing this evening? Once again, we've not learnt anything. We also had a report come forward to the Constitution Working Party last year about how to speed up meetings and make them more efficient. Now, that report has not progressed at all. And so actually, if we've got a problem with the running of meetings, I think the Constitution Working Party is the place to deal with it, because if you need to amend the Constitution Working Party brings forward suggestions which then can be dealt with by council. It's not a place for scrutiny. But you know, the Constitution's one aspect, and also pure common sense is another. We've already had the peer review report, which goes into quite a lot of detail about conduct of council meetings. It's all in writing from independent experts, yet we don't seem to have heeded that advice. And so what we're actually going to do is send it out to another body, which is going to produce a report, but if we aren't going to listen to it, what's the point? What I would also like to highlight is that the whole reason this issue came to light at the last council meeting is because we were voting on an amendment to refer the timetable of meetings to scrutiny, despite the fact that council had voted 2-1 to continue with evening meetings. Now, those who are criticising the length of meetings and the late start times were also the ones who moved this amendment at the 11th hour, which in turn extended the meeting by 1 hour, that we shouldn't have evening meetings. So it's quite contradictory. And so I think there are better ways to deal with this issue, and actually we need a commonsensical approach and listen to what's already been said, listen to what everyone already knows, that there are ways to improve the workings of meetings. We also need to build on the work that's already been done in terms of the Constitution Working Party. ...scrutiny report, again, to tell us what we already need is action, not words. Thank you.
Councillor Clark.
Am I correct, Chair, that we are at the end of the long meetings? Or am I missing something?
Right, anybody else to speak on the amendment? Okay, that's... Okay, on the amendment, please can we go to the vote? Take the decision.
I did say I reserved my position, Chair.
Yeah, that's all right.
All I have to say, Chairman, is I can't... Is I just...
I'll take the decision to go to the vote. Sorry, Councillor Andrews.
No, well, Chair, you had no power to take that decision because I'd already reserved my position to right to speak. You've got to let me speak. It's
no,
the rules,
no,
Chairman.
I'm sorry. Well, I've said we're going to the vote. We're going to the vote.
Well, Chair, I'm sorry. You are breaking the law. Yes, you are.
It's my.
You are. You. It may be your prerogative to break the law, but you are breaking the law. You cannot just tell a member.
Don't shout, Councillor.
When a member has reserved his position, you should. Your duty is to say, Councillor Andrews, do you want to say anything? And you didn't.
I'm sorry, Councillor Andrews. I've got to come down one side or the other. I've asked people to vote.
It is an absolute disgrace, Chairman. A total disgrace.
Chair, point of order. Point of order. On what standing order are you telling somebody who's reserved their right, which I've watched reserving right to speak in this council for a mere 14 years so far in a few weeks' time, when somebody's reserved their right, it has always been sacrosanct. Because otherwise you're going to have people going, I wonder if I have to do it now, whatever else. You've always known, if you reserved your right, that you would be able to speak in the debate at some point, in the same way as the mover has the right to reply, in the same way as the etc. And on that basis, Chair, I really would consider, and I do not wish to listen to Councillor Andrews at all. However, I do think that he has the constitutional right to be heard.
Okay, thank you for that. I can tell there's strong feelings there. So, Councillor Andrews, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate that. I'm sorry if I took offence. All I would like to say, Chairman, is that we're talking about a censure motion, and personally, I cannot see how paragraph B fits into is entirely relevant to the rest of the motion. It's an entirely separate matter, and it shouldn't have been included in this recommendation. And if it is included, there should be a separate vote on it, Chairman. Because personally, I can agree with recommendations B, C, and the first A, but I find it very difficult to agree with B, and I won't go into reasons for disagreeing with B, but I do think it's a separate matter, should be taken separately, and for that reason I do support Councillor Jarrett's amendment.
Councillor Jarrett, do you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. I've said what I want to say, and I just reiterate that I just don't think these two items should be the two parts of this motion should be taken together. We've already got a request to look at the timings of the meetings, and I just think this one should be taken separately. So I would just like to recommend this amendment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I'll go for the vote this time on the amendment. Where are we now? Oops.
Chairman, that's 7 votes for the amendment, 13 against, and 7 abstentions.
Okay, the amendment is lost. Okay, we move on to the original debate. Councillor Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having listened to that debate, I think what I'm going to say as part of this process is even more pertinent, really. The Corporate Governance Standards Subcommittee gave very, very careful thought to the other recommendations on sanctions. The request to the leader of the Conservative Group to suspend Councillor Roper from committees for 6 months and the apology to the Chairman of Council and all councillors were considered by the subcommittee and the independent person to be proportionate sanctions, and I think we probably can all agree on that. But then consideration was also given to steps that can be taken to ensure that the electronic voting units are moved away from the table where members of committees are sat, to ensure that the units of absent councillors cannot be used again. And I think we can agree on that one. But I also believe it's important that we look at the other recommendation, because we've already got on the table at overview and scrutiny the report to look at the start times of meetings. We've only really started on that. We've really only scratched the surface. We have terms of reference on the table. But when we met last week, we did say that this meeting was happening this evening and this motion would be coming to council, and that there would maybe be a need to amend where we were with that review. I don't agree with other members that the two things should be separated. I think it should be one, because I think the two are intricately linked. The other thing that's happened at scrutiny is that we've been criticised for our reports taking so long. Well, you know, if we're going to do two reports instead of one, that would be doing that. But that amendment has been lost anyway, so I won't make any further remarks about that. I would just say that the council has to find ways of organising council meetings better than we do, so that they don't extend into the late evening, which is really bad practice. Here we are at 10 o'clock. We are still at a council meeting. There was very strong support for that from the independent person on the committee, and as we've already heard this evening, the Peer Challenge Review report also supports improvements to the running of our council meetings. So I really would urge members to vote in favour of these recommendations. And just to finish, if I've got a few minutes, I just wanted to refer to some of the comments that were made by the independent member, Jill Baker. She has lots of experience of meetings. She's been running meetings for over 40 years in public and charitable organisations. And her comment was that the lateness of the hour when the voting question was taken, it was 25 to 11 at night. This was more than 4 hours since the beginning of the meeting. And bearing in mind that some councillors would have already undertaken a day at work, this would probably have been more than 14 hours since many began their working day. As a citizen of Rydale, I'm concerned that councillors are not making the best use of meeting time and that tiredness may result in poor decision-making, mistakes and perhaps poor judgment because of this. So I hope you will support the recommendations. Thank you.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I have a significant issue with this, because for me, we were here considering the motion of censure against Councillor Roper, and I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with that. But actually, to see this tagged onto the bottom A and B, number one, A does not consider the converse side of the story, that when a member is late to a meeting, his voting unit is already on the table and no thought's been given to that. It's not a criticism, it is an observation. And B, I don't believe that those two bits tagged onto the bottom of this, when it's a very serious matter that we are dealing with in a censure motion, should even be on here. It should come forward as a separate thing entirely. And I would like to move an amendment that says A and B are taken off, we move to the censure motion, and the rest of this is carried on at another meeting.
Yeah, the censure motion has been voted on already.
That's been done.
It's just, we're just...
No, well, we can't.
Councillor Sanderson? Okay. Okay, so the amendment is that A and B, that's the final 2 points, are relating to the subcommittee recommendations, are removed and considered separately. Councillor Goodrick, do you want to talk on this?
Thank you, yeah. I apologise to members of my group because it wasn't an issue, because what we were discussing in our group meeting was the motion of censure against Councillor Raper. These two bits have slipped in at the bottom. It doesn't give, conversely, the start times of when a member's late, his or her apparatus are on the desk ready for you when you come in. So if you're late, what happens about that? And this whole thing is not appropriate. We are discussing a censure motion against a member of the council.
Excuse me, Councillor Goodrick. I have to say that the censure, this was done in two parts. In the first part, the censure motion has already been debated and voted on. So we're talking about the second bit here.
But with respect, Chairman, it does say, B and C, that the group leader be asked to suspend Councillor Roper from committees and that he apologises to the council. I have no problem with those two bits. It's the two bits at the bottom which are the secondary bits. And now those secondary bits should have been treated as a separate item. I'm sorry, Chairman, but that's what I believe.
Thank you. Councillor Sanderson, do you want to say anything?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I'm really uncomfortable with little B, and I was when it came to the Overview and Scrutiny Committee as well. When I signed up to represent my community for a 4-year term, I was fully aware of the start times of meetings. I judged the commitment that I'd have to make, and I made a contract on that basis of the commitment. If the times are changed, it's likely that I won't be able to come to the meetings. And as such, I can't do the job I was elected to do. So if we're considering the meeting time changes, I think it should be done and considered just before the next election rather than in the midterm when we've already made that commitment to what we're going to do. So that's why I want to separate little B from the rest of it.
Councillor Clark.
I have absolutely no problem in supporting this amendment whatsoever, but I have two concerns that don't actually move me towards opposing it at all. But those two concerns are that we do need a system of putting down when people arrive, and I would agree with Councillor Goodrick on that one, as well as leaving. And if you tie that in tightly and the voting machines are visible, fine. The start times of meetings, it's got to come at this time of night, hasn't it, really? It's a sort of disease this council has. And the efficient running of meetings is clearly something that we need to look at. But I don't think it should be something that's tacked into Overview and Scrutiny at all, Ed, which is why we abstained on your thing. Yes, we agreed with you, but we didn't want it to go into there. We wanted it to be looked at properly as a specific job with terms of reference given to you by council as to what we'd like to see, or something of that sort of nature. So on that basis, I will be supporting this amendment, but I do think we must in our minds keep these two bits and what is happening to them, because just to say, oh well, we could end up with the same thing with voting in the future, and oh dear, we don't mind having inefficient council meetings, is not the solution. But I think in relation to the censure motion tonight, they should be gone out of the way. Thank you, Chair.
Anybody else? Councillor Bailey?
Well, just briefly, Chairman, it's getting late again, isn't it? But I do think that the holistic issue that we've looked at is difficult to pick and choose from. And I do have a lot of respect for the involvement of the subcommittee and the independent person and the professional time and effort that they've spent into doing this. And I'm very loath to pick and choose amongst the recommendations that they've made. And so I totally accept people may want scrutiny to do this or that. I also understand that scrutiny has the freedom to do as it thinks best, and if scrutiny decided when it got this that it thought it should do them separately, I'm quite sure that it has the remit and the ability to do that or other. But that this is about the holistic report and recommendations of the subcommittee and the independent person with all that knowledge and all that experience. And personally, I'm going to stick with those recommendations.
Okay, anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Keel.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to respond to Councillor Sanderson. This is not, the reference to daytime meetings is not what we're discussing here at all. The recommendation was about the efficient running of full council meetings so that they do not go on till this time of the evening. There is no reference, and I would urge members not to just talk about the start time of meetings, because that is not what we're talking about here.
Councillor Ives.
I'd just like to make the point that those who moan about the efficient running of meetings, I'd like to reiterate that this council voted 2-1 to continue having evening meetings. So if you want an efficient running council, why would you then refer the matter to scrutiny to consider and then for it to come back to council for you to rediscuss an issue that you've already agreed on by a 2-1 margin? Now, I think there is a saying that you choose your battles wisely, and it just saddens me that we've got a huge amount of time being spent on this issue, which I already think has been agreed. So can we move on and just banish this meeting time malarkey to the oblivion, because actually we need to be focusing on the efficient running of meetings, and what we're trying to achieve by reviewing meeting times is not helping the situation.
Councillor Keel.
On that.
That was from me from the Constitution about 4 years ago. There is no right to come back to me. Thank you.
Right. Well, that's great.
Okay. Let's finish this off. Councillor Sanderson, do you want to speak?
Say very briefly that at point B there must be a mistake, because it says that the O&S review into the start time. So if it's not about the start time, do you think that should be taken out of the report? Because obviously it's very confusing.
Okay, can we sum this up? Councillor Goodrick, do you want to say any more?
Chairman, in brief, we need to separate the two issues, Councillor Raper and the action that this council chooses to take against him, and the recommendations to the group leader and his apology, and separately consider properly the two issues that are at the bottom. The two things are not related in the censure motion itself. I don't disagree that they've come about because of it, but they are two entirely separate issues and should be considered so.
Okay, let's go to the vote on this amendment.
Before you do, does not Councillor Keel have the right of reply to come back on this?
Yes, okay.
She has a right to come back to sum up the debate. She moved it in the first place, did she not? Right back at the beginning. But she doesn't want to. She was screaming that she did want to, which is why I jumped in. If she doesn't want to, Chair, don't scream that you want to then.
Do you want to say any more? No. No. All right, let's vote on this amendment. These be removed.
Those be removed and considered separately. And then if that's the case, then we've still got to vote on these two, haven't we?
Chairman, that's 12 votes for, 12 against, and 1 abstention. What's he looking at?
What
was that there? Well, I don't know what he's saying. How did what change?
it's my casting vote, and so I vote against. The amendment is lost. Okay. Okay, going back to the
Councillor Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I will reluctantly vote in favour of this motion, Chairman. Although I want to put on record, please, everybody having record that I have not agreed with item B at the bottom of the page. Could I also mention, Chairman, that when you finish the voting on this, there is just one other point that I want to raise, because I'm not sure that we actually made a decision on one of the items on the agenda. Because if you look at item 13, it says to consider the recommendations to minute 48 from the Policy and Resources Committee, which we did, and then it says and in the subsequent report to the Council of the Head of Planning on page 147. I'm not sure we did that, and if we hadn't, perhaps we ought to. I could be wrong about that, but that's my feeling about the way the meeting went.
Let's just we'll deal with this one first. Does anybody want to speak on the original motion? Councillor Goodrick.
Well, you've now placed me in an insidious position because I need to vote for B and C but can't vote for A and B, so I will not be voting.
Okay. Anybody else? Anybody wants any summing up? Let's go to the vote then.
Chairman, that's 17 votes for and 7 abstentions.
So the motion is carried.
So just going back to Councillor Andrews' point.
Just
Chairman, did we make a decision on page 147?
Hang on, I'm just checking this point.
Yes, we did.
We did vote on both. I have no more urgent business, ladies and gentlemen, so stumps.